Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday. That's exciting. The Tuesday, February 24th, 2009, Carrboro Board of Aldermen public hearing. We'll begin with a public hearing to obtain community input on town needs and budget for the upcoming fiscal year beginning July 1st. Mr. Manager, do you have a presentation?
No, sir.
Okay. Are there any folks here who would like to speak on budget priorities? Yes, sir. Come up to the podium. Charmin, could you grab the sign-up list back there?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi. My name is John Wilner. I'm the Executive Director of the Arts Center and a resident of Carrboro. And I have to say that I don't envy you or the manager as you go through creating a budget in an environment like this. You're going to have to make some tough choices. And I'm here to ask you to double the amount of money that you've been giving to the Arts Center, from $15,000 to $30,000. How do I have the nerve to do that in this environment? I'm going to step away from my role at the Arts Center for a second and talk about all of the nonprofits that enrich this community and, in some instances, provide services that the town would otherwise have to provide. There is no stimulus for us. There are no tax breaks for us. There is no bailout for us. I want you to imagine what this town would be like without El Centro Latino or the IFC, the Arts Center. I could go on and on. We need help. Now let me go back to the Arts Center. The Arts Center programs are incredibly successful now. We serve upwards of 30,000 kids a year. We gave out about $40,000 in scholarships last year. We're bringing people into the community for concerts and theater events. They eat in our local restaurants. Our programs are doing really well. But the cost of doing business for all the nonprofits continues to rise. You know, our fixed expenses keep going up. So we have to depend on raising money from outside our program areas. Well, raising money for a nonprofit assumes that there is disposable income for individuals, corporations, and foundations to let loose some money to nonprofits. They're in the same boat. There is no disposable income. I can tell you that I'm very gratified that the citizens of our community have continued to support us at the same level as they have for many years. We're very fortunate in that respect. But all of our other sources of unearned revenue are drying up. And I just ask you, when you go into your sessions to discuss the budget, I ask you to really consider the plight of the nonprofits in our community. Thanks a lot. Yes.
I'm not saying this as an either or. This is an end. Are there other, other than monetary donations, are there other ways you can think of that the municipalities can help the nonprofits? And I'm not saying that instead of money. I'm saying in addition to.
I'm sure there are. I'm not prepared right now to say exactly what they are.
If you can think of that, would you let us know?
But I also think that with the town's assistance, perhaps we can find a way for nonprofits to share resources and to work together and collaborate. So if you're talking about non-financial ways of helping, that could be one way, for example.
Okay. Well, we're anxious to hear other ways, too.
Thank you, John.
Okay. Thank you all.
Robert Dowling, are you here? You are here.
Let's see,
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the Board of Aldermen. My name's Robert Dowling. I'm the Executive Director of Orange Community Housing and Land Trust. We do affordable housing, and we implement your inclusionary housing program. In the current fiscal year, you provide us with $34,000 of operating monies, and we're asking that you provide the same in the next fiscal year. Like John, I recognize it's a very difficult year, and I've provided you with a line item budget, which I think is probably optimistic, but it's the budget the board approved, and if it proves to be too optimistic, we'll have to go back and change the expense lines to adjust for what might be reduced revenues. We all know it's a very difficult environment, and resources are drying up all over. Unfortunately for us, we're probably going to be doing twice as much volume next year as we do every year. And that's mostly caused by the town of Chapel Hill's inclusionary housing policies. And so, as you notice on my line item budget, I'm asking the town of Chapel Hill for a little bit more money. The budget also includes a $28,000 operating deficit. And we're fortunate that we can pick up that type of deficit from our own operating reserves. But we are continuing to work with work in Carborough. We did four houses last year. I hope we're about ready to start two houses on Press Street. Working with developers in Claremont. And as you know, we've committed to work with all the downtown condominium developers as well as other developers that you all have approved. So we stand ready to implement the inclusionary housing policies. And in this difficult budget year, we ask you to do as best you can. Thank you.
Robert, I have a question for you. On the fee income, I'm noticing that's about a two-thirds increase.
Yes.
Could you just describe to us what that is and why that's going up?
We're fortunate that we have the ability to earn income. When we sell homes, every time we sell a home, we try to earn a fee. And so next year, fiscal year, when we expect to sell twice as many homes, we expect to have at least twice as much fee income. So every home we sell, we shoot for a $3,000 fee every single time. We don't always get it, but we try.
Robert, is the operations manager fees, are those going up because of the increase of work that you have this year?
The operations manager is a position we're looking to hire right now. The board recognized the increase in our work. We just continue to grow every year. And right now with this financial downturn, a new line of business we're in is property management. We're recognizing that many of our low-income home buyers are struggling to make payments. Some people have lost hours, hourly workers. People have lost work, and people are becoming delinquent. And we used to have 5 or 6 or 7 people who were delinquent every month, and now we have more than 20. And there are some people who are homeowners who will simply not make it. I'm negotiating with 2 different banks right now in order to forestall foreclosure. And it's extraordinarily difficult for the homeowners, and it puts a burden on the organization. A year ago, I never thought about this. But we're spending a lot of time working with people because we don't want to lose homes in foreclosure. And getting around to answering your question, there's simply too much work. And the board recognizes that as executive director, I should be doing more in the fundraising realm, which I have never done that much of. And I said, well, I already work 60 hours a week, so when is it you want me to do fundraising? And they said, we need to hire someone. And so we're looking to hire an operations manager to run the organization to free up my time so I can do more getting out and trying to do fundraising.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you all.
Sharon Cook.
Good evening. I'd like to ask that you include in your budget request funding for a targeted study group for the Homestead Road for the full length. This is an a corridor, you know, we have the Northern Study Area, Small Area Plan Implementation Study Group that is still waiting to come up with their recommendations, but we know that that area is already, but tonight we're going to talk about Claremont. More and more development is happening along there. It's going to continue to help happen, and it will include commercial development. What makes me feel like this is so important that we don't just let it happen and then solve problems along the way. Right now, the plan is for that to be one lane in each direction with a center turn lane. And I just want to give you an example of what can happen and what has happened in that kind of situation. As you know, Weaver Dairy Extension, pretty close to Martin Luther King Boulevard, there is Timberline Shopping Center there, and then across on the north, on the south side is Timberline Shopping Center. On the north side of Weaver Dairy is our homes. Okay, in fourth grade, and now Eric would be in senior in high school now. I've kind of lost track of him. But when Eric was a fourth grader, he was walking across the street following his brother from his home on the north side of Weaver Dairy over to the shopping center. He was hit by a car. Some of you might remember that. The car struck him. He went over the top of the car. He landed on the back, on the pavement on the back, and was in a coma for over a month. And luckily, he did survive that, but this is the kind of thing that we're going to, if we continue with this plan to have just two lanes and a turn lane and no accommodations for pedestrians, as we pretty much have seen as some of the new developments are coming out, we're going to find ourselves all of a sudden with this kind of situation as kids need to go back and forth to the stores, to their friends' houses, and these kinds of things. So one concern is that there's a certain cost to putting a study group together, staff time, and these other kind of things. But I think that it's critical that we be proactive in preventing these kind of problems from happening in our community, that we learn from our sister city next door, and that we don't repeat those same kind of mistakes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Alana Kalamanis. Okay.
We need to, you know, there's such traffic going on in that area now, and with it's terrible now, we need to have something very quickly to study that.
Okay, thank you. All right, is there anybody else who wants to speak on the budget or the budget priorities, that is to say? All right, this will be not at all be the last opportunity to give some input. Mr. Manager, What are the next couple of steps in the process so that those following at home?
Well, the next step, the department heads and the assistant town manager and I are working on the budget. We'll be working on a draft budget over the next several months. The next official step will be presentation to you all on, I think, May the 5th. And then following that, another public hearing and at least one or more budget work sessions with a budget to be adopted by June 30th of this year. And as in the past, if folks who weren't here tonight or didn't want to speak tonight have comments, they can still forward those into the town, and we will consider those as a part of our budget preparation.
Okay. Anything further from the board at this time? If not, we'll move on to item two, which is a public hearing on a temporary street closing request for the Tar Heel 10 miler. Does the board, we've had a brief presentation on this before. Does the board want to hear a presentation on it?
Good.
Okay, I have, I'm not sure how you, Tice Wynn signed up. Were you just here to answer questions?
Sure, yes.
Yes, that's the correct answer. Okay, are there any questions for Mr. Wynn? All right, hearing none.
Move the item.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously. Item three, a public hearing on temporary street closing request for the Carrboro Classic Endurance Sports Festival. Does the board need a presentation on this? Okay. Tice Wind is the only person signed up. Are there any questions for Mr. Wind?
No.
Yes, ma'am.
I have questions for staff. This is from starting at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning, right? This is the one that is Sunday, April 5th from 8 to 11:30. Those are hours when a lot of the people in Carrboro are going to church. And I know in the past with some of these races, I've heard from people who couldn't get out of the road, who felt that they were locked onto their street and couldn't you know, one lady who kept trying to go see her mother, who was elderly and lived alone, and she couldn't do that for quite a while. How are we going to ensure that people can not have to wait a long period of time to get out? You know, they're running late, want to get to church.
Well, there are race volunteers. There are some public works folks and police folks obviously working to keep the runners safe as well as keeping traffic moving. If we have a particular area, and I have not received personally any, you know, complaints of certain areas, but if we have a particular block, a particular section of street, we can work with the race organizers to make sure somebody is there to help in certain
respects. But how long? So how long would it take? You know, if you lived on one of these roads that leads into Hillsborough, and you wanted to get out onto Hillsborough Street, how long could any one individual expect to be blocked onto their street?
Well, I guess I'm trying to look at the map here and respond to your question at the same time, and perhaps the race folks are here to also understand a little bit better the timing. Of course, in the early parts of the race, the runners are bunched a little bit closer together, but they're also moving quicker. Then as time goes on, they spread out, and there are certainly more gaps at that time.
But when there's a gap, are people allowed? How long would somebody be stuck on their street is what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, I don't know that they'll ever be stuck on the street. I would say there's going to be intermittent interruptions for, minutes, that type of thing, but not, half hours or hours or, that type of thing. And if there is, we have not heard of those kinds of issues.
Yeah, I've gotten calls.
Many years doing this successfully with no problems.
Well, excuse me, I've gotten calls from people and take that seriously.
It's certainly something that we take seriously. We understand that obviously these events take place in neighborhoods and so forth. So we do communicate clearly with our volunteers that they need to obviously provide for the safety of the participants, and then to make sure that any traffic coming out of these side streets is accommodated as quickly as possible. As the race starts at 8 o'clock, there is a large wave of participants that comes by. That would be a slight delay, but after that, things will start thinning out so much so that there should never be a time where a car is waiting for, I would venture to say, longer than a minute, if that. So, that's something that we understand is important, so we do pay attention to that detail.
And, I mean, I kind of have the same concerns about the ones we already voted on, because that looks like a very large race on Saturdays, when there's lots going on in our downtown, and these are just happening so often, and there are people who live and work, and this is their home, and they have their weekends to get out and do things. And so I think there needs to be a lot of respect for the people who live here, and it might be, if somebody's having to wait too long, stop the people that are running and let the family get out to go where they need to go. And I just want to make sure that our residents are treated with respect.
Yes, ma'am.
Because I've heard times when they haven't been.
George, is one lane left open, like one direction open on each of the streets?
There are some points in the race where they actually cross a street, but again, there's police, I think, at Hillsborough and so forth. There are police there to help with the gaps and so forth.
As long as someone get out of their driveway, they can move in one direction down
certainly,
the road
yes.
without being obstructed by
yes,
the rest.
Correct.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
All right. The matter passes 6-1.
Thank you.
If you will take those thoughts and questions into account in organizing the event. All right. Item now on to the easy part. Item 4, a continuation of the public hearing on a conditional use permit modification for Claremont Phases 4 and 5.
We do have an update for the board from James Thomas.
Okay.
All right, I'm just going to quickly update a couple of things this evening. Obviously, this is a continuation of the hearing from the end of last month. What we have done here is the board had various questions from the last meeting, and staff, in conjunction with the actual developer, has included various attachments and whatnot in order to answer those various questions that the Board of Aldermen did have. I have notated those here. Like I said, the actual developer, Omar, is here, and Phil Post is also here. If you guys have any more detailed questions from them, this is just a continuation of that. And what this is after the meeting of last month, we actually added three additional recommendations. I won't read those in length, but you guys probably had a chance to review those. Just dealing with basically the connectivity to the Carolina North property, and then the second one is dealing with the payment in lieu for the Greenway. And then the final one is dealing with actually creating an easement to the Carolina North property. Like I said, the developer and engineer are here this evening. I'll try to answer any questions if you have any questions of me.
Okay, we have about 18 people signed up to speak on this at this public hearing so far. So I would like to ask the board members to pose questions to staff if they have them right now, bearing in mind.
Kevin, it's a clarification.
Go right ahead.
For the new staff recommendation for number 17.
Yes.
Who checks the developer's estimate to construct the Greenway?
Well, with conversations with the developer, they have offered to do a payment in lieu of what it would cost them. And staff has used, I think Adina can maybe add on to that. She has, I believe Adina has consulted with a couple of Greenway people that we are using to review that. To review that estimate that was included in your packet.
Are there some other questions? Right, I mean, there may be some after we hear from the public as well. But are there some questions right now?
Real quick, the one thing that we haven't talked about much is the drainage basin and the 200-foot cement culvert that's behind somebody's house, and they seemed very concerned about that.
Yeah. I will point out in your packet that
I'm trying to find.
Yeah, the gentleman, he lived on, if you're going down Colfax, he lived at the end of that, backed up to the Carolina North property. And he did write that initial letter that was forwarded to you. And I talked to Omar and Phil Post, and they actually met with the gentleman on site. And that was included as an attachment with an email from that gentleman. I believe his name was Fenton.
Yeah, that's right.
Back to us saying, you know, Omar and Phil Post came out and basically met with him, and he's satisfied.
And now, is there something that
he's here and signed up to speak?
Okay.
So.
Yeah. I don't want to put words in his mouth.
So that's what they want.
We'll see how satisfied he is.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I will not prolong things. Thank you.
All right. Other questions for the staff before we. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, I had two questions that I emailed. Well, actually, one that I emailed and one that I've kind of clarified in my own thinking since then. One was a concern about the recreation points, that the recreation points on the north side of Homestead are credited toward this phase of the project, while there's apparently no safe access across Homestead, and that doesn't really seem right to me, that if we're good, that key aspect of getting recreation points is that the people should have very safe access to those recreational opportunities. So has staff had a talk?
Yes, we did discuss that internally. Like I said, this is a modification to the original SUP or CUP for 1, 2, and 3, and we did do a count of the points, recreation points that they had in phase 1, 2, and 3, and with the additional phase 4 and 5, they were still below that number of points that was required. And I understand.
Sorry to interrupt, but could you explain to me why a phase that's, as we just heard during our previous public hearing, is separated by an increasingly dangerous road, why that's considered a modification under the ordinance? It seems like, I mean, maybe that's what the root of the problem is, that I mean, there's a problem there somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to try and get to the root of it.
Yeah.
And maybe the attorney has something to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing that precludes the a project that is owned by the same folks and that can be incorporated in the same covenants from being separated by the road. Obviously, there are a lot of projects that are on both sides of one sort of a road or the other. Collector, I don't know off the top of my head of anyone that is separated by an arterial road, but there's nothing that excludes it in the ordinance, put it that way. Mm-hmm. So I think the issue in this particular case is, and we certainly have in the past have allowed a second phase or a third phase, a subsequent phase, I should say, to take advantage of and regard the recreation points for that subsequent phase as being satisfied by excess in the first phase, as long as they're all tied together. Mm-hmm. There's nothing unusual about that. I think, obviously, what is an issue is there is a provision in the ordinance, subsection 196 deals with recreation points, and 196G says that active recreational facilities and areas should be located throughout the development so that they can be reached safely and easily by their anticipated users. That was not written in specific contemplation of exactly this situation. It was just written to say clearly that in order for the recreation facilities have to be, as indicated, safely and easily available to the people that are going to be using them. Now, I would say certainly that if there were if someone came to us and said, well, we own the track a mile and a half down the road and we want to allow them to use our recreation facilities, I think would fairly easily fall outside their, I would be difficult to reach a conclusion that they would be easily available to all the anticipated users. So in this case, being right across the street, I think the staff came to the conclusion, they must have come to the conclusion that they would satisfy this subsection G. Obviously, ultimately, that's a conclusion that you all have to reach, but I mean, that's...
So, but that specifies it has to be both safely and easily accessible. Am I understanding that?
Yes. It's active recreational facilities and areas should be located throughout the development so they can be reached safely and easily by their anticipated users. So if this, based upon evidence in the record, if you were to conclude that that it is that a recreation area on the south side of Homestead, recreation on the north side of Homestead is not easily and safely available to or reached by the users on the south side, then you could reach your conclusion on that, and then obviously they wouldn't then be satisfying the recreation requirements. That would have to be based upon your conclusion, how you interpret that. Staff reads it one way, and obviously they've concluded that it meets the requirements, and but theirs is a recommendation, yours is the choice.
Right. So, James, clearly, as Mike is expressing, you all determine that this recreation on the north side can be safely accessed.
Yes.
Can you speak to that?
By our review, like I said, it does meet the requirements of the land use ordinance with the inclusion of the access to the north property, or phase 1, 2, and 3, by using the bridge underneath. By using the bridge underneath the bridge on Homestead,
And is it your belief that do you have a map of the proposed project?
Probably do.
That's pretty good.
The previous one, back too.
So,
and it's. Do you have reason to believe that people coming from way down on the southwest over here,
mm-hmm.
they're going to walk up and they'll get to Homestead, and that they'll go all the way up to the bridge and cross under rather than attempt a less safe crossing at many points in between?
I mean, I can't guarantee that.
Well, I mean, do you all have a way of evaluating that sort of question?
No.
So you just presume that because the access is under the bridge, somehow people will come to use that, and that will make it safe.
Where, if I could jump in for just a second, where are the recreation? Can you point to the recreation amenities on the
actual? This is where the pool. This is where the clubhouse is and the pool, and then uh-huh. there's a tot lot in the rear.
Okay.
And then,
sorry, Dan.
That's fine. Yeah.
And then they're proposing a beneath the power lines. Actual, those were the will actually be where the play field will be.
Mm-hmm. Dan, do you?
No, I guess just that, you know, I don't agree that that's safe, and so I don't know if you all have any more to say about that, but I just have a different judgment about that, especially, you know, children. You know, I'm not the youngest children, hopefully won't go on their own, but certainly teenagers or tweeners, mm-hmm. you know, could be, you know, running across to get to the pool. And I do see that as a safety issue. I have another question.
I don't know
if anyone has any follow-up on that. But the other question I have to do has to do with the email from Friends of Bowling Creek about the detention ponds that are going into the forested area. And I understand that our current ordinance doesn't really, that what's being done does meet our current ordinance. But my question is, do the proposed changes that we're going to be reviewing in the near future speak to a better solution for that? And maybe Randy needs to answer this if he's here. And so there's that question as to what's coming. And then a more procedural question as to whether we can, in the approval, have the some trigger point down the road where if an improved standard is available, that would be applied.
I will defer that first part of that question to Randy. And I think Will Hines is here also from Sungate. But like you said, one of the things that one of the attachments actually is from Sungate within your packet, talking in regards to those wet detention basins and mm-hmm. you know how they're, you know, work basically their state of the art per se.
Is anyone from Friends of Bowling Creek signed up? Or is anyone here from Friends of Bowling? I guess not.
Not. You know, not evidently.
So, yeah, so I would like to hear the response to that if Randy's prepared to answer that.
While Randy's coming up, let me answer the second question. Uh-huh. I don't think that's possible for us to. I don't think we can put a condition that says if there's a better way to do it in the future, you have to do it that way. I think we have an ordinance that has standards right now, and if they meet mm-hmm. that, that's what we can do.
Is it possible that if the applicant were sure. willing 3 months sure. from now to do, would we have to come back and have, you know, a modification to the permit?
No, I think
would that be an administrative?
No, I mean, I think as often occurs, if there's a condition that's acceptable to the applicant that says, you know, if Y happens in the future or Y is available to us or something, we will do that. I mean, that,
yeah,
we do that all the time.
That's what I would be interested in potentially on this.
Okay. My name is Will Hans with Slingate Design Group. And specifically, what is your question?
My question, are you involved in the review of
Yes, I am.
Okay. So we specifically had a concern from Friends of Bowling Creek about the detention ponds that will encroach on the forest buffer and reduce the pervious surface leading down toward Bowling Creek. And so my question is, it was suggested, I'm not sure if it was in the packet or otherwise, that the upcoming changes might speak to that and have a solution that is that better preserves the forest buffer. So that, I guess that's my question. Is that coming?
Well,
in what's going to be proposed?
Just to back up a little bit, it is true that part of the detention basin, at least as far as the fill from basically the dam that surrounds the detention basin, falls within the buffer, Bowling Creek buffer. And it is also true that the current ordinance does allow that. Mm-hmm. It is my understanding that the new proposed buffer rules that the board has in front of them to eventually vote on it restricts it. So they may not, you know, if a future project wanted to do the same thing, they would not be able to do the same type of design. It would have to actually be outside the buffer.
And is there an alternative means provided in the new regulation, or it just means they'd have to move the
I'm not familiar enough with it to really say if there's an alternate means. It's my understanding that there's some things that allow and some things that are not allowed, and it's my understanding that would not be allowed.
Okay. And what it would likely do then is just push it farther back.
That's correct. I mean, if they were to design this to meet that future regulation, they would actually have to shift the detention basin away from the buffer, which, as you can see, it's kind of between the buffer and the proposed street. So there's not a whole lot of room. You actually have to move the streets and then also the lots.
Okay.
So it's not easily achieved in this situation.
All right. Thank you.
At this stage.
Okay. That answers my question. Appreciate it.
Okay. Lydia.
Yeah, my question is for James. And it was piggybacking a little off of Dan's first question. It's my memory. Well, I know the planning board had recommended that the applicant add a playground on the south side of Homestead Road in phases 4 and 5. And it's my memory that they agreed to do so, although it's not on paper anywhere. And I wanted to know how many recreation points that might boost the overall amount if that happens. And no answer, you don't have to get right away, maybe
right.
During the course of the evening or something.
Yeah, I'd have to look in the ordinance to get that. Yeah.
Yes.
While you're doing that, could you figure out what would happen if we didn't count the stuff across the street? You don't have to tell me now. You can wait. When you give her answer.
We'll keep you busy during the public hearing. All right. I'm almost reluctant to ask whether any other questions for James. Okay. If you'll have a seat. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
All right. I have, it looks like 18 folks signed up to speak on this public hearing. I'll point out that there's at least as many people signed up to speak in the next public hearing, and we would like to get through both public hearings tonight. So it is our policy to ask you to limit your comments to 3 minutes. So I would especially ask you to be careful to try and observe that limit tonight, because we do have a lot of people to hear from. I'm going to call on these people in order that they're signed up here, and then if you're not signed up and you feel moved to speak at the end of 18 presentations, then you can raise your hand and I'll probably call on you.
People can also say, I agree with my neighbor, rather than having to restate the same thing.
Absolutely. The first person signed up is Deborah Tobias, I think, if I'm reading that right.
Tobias.
Well, come on up. And the next person after that will be Robert Murphy, so that you can start getting ready.
me, please? Raise your right hand. Raise your right hand. So solemnly swear that from the evidence you're about to give the truth to the best of your knowledge.
I do. Yes. Thank you. I just really want to speak for a moment on this. I'm a resident in Claremont, and having the under Homestead, having a bridge under Homestead, to me feels critically important. I come to you as a mom, and when I heard this other mom talk about her child being hit and in a coma, I think, oh my God, that could be my child. So when we think about, you know, our kids and what's in their best interest, I can't imagine why we wouldn't have this. So I come to you as a mom, but I also come to you as a woman who's been well-trained in child development. I have several degrees, lots of fellowship. My entire life has been about children, and now I'm raising children. I think that, you know, the way kids think, I can say to my kids, I want you to go down onto the end there and what, you know, take the crosswalk. It's like their brains aren't as developed as ours. They're not going to see consequences. There's so much research on this. So even though they have the best of intentions, and my kids are good kids, they would still, I mean, their children, they're thinking, I want to get to the other side. There's a park over there, or there's a friend over there. To me, it's a matter of safety, because we don't want to have one child killed. And I think, I can't even believe I say those words out loud, because it could be someone I know. To not have it is like, I just don't think it's putting the safety of our community's children first. I heard that something about flooding and all this other stuff, and I think it is fantastic that this town is so concerned about the way we grow, about what we do, but this is not just about water or drainage, or this is about our children's lives. So they are going to want to get to the other side, and there is Chapel Hill High School, Sewell, and Smith, and my kids are going to be going to the middle and the high school. So I think even for that, this is access from a very specific point over there. And to answer the question, you know, the idea would, if it was further down, do we know kids are going to use it? What I know is there's a better chance, if there's a safe way to get across, I think our kids are going to use it. And if it's accessible, which this is, I live there, I'm there all the time. So I think that, again, I think putting human lives, our children, above, because this is a really busy road. I think someone, I was also reading something about, you know, crosswalks or signs. People don't slow down for that. They just don't. It takes one person to be in a rush. And we know, we've seen it. I mean, I've seen it all the time. So I come to you as a mom who says, please, I want my kids to be safe. This is just such a critical point to me. So, again, I appreciate the good work you all do. And I know it's probably a tough decision, but it matters to the parents who are my neighbors. So thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Robert Murphy and then Scott Christie. Incidentally, so that you understand, this is a quasi-judicial hearing, which means that people who are speaking to us during this hearing need to be sworn. There are a few people signed up who spoke last time, and they will not need to be re-sworn. They're considered still under oath. So you'll see a few people who don't need to be re-sworn. Go right ahead.
Well, I want to thank you, and I'll be very brief. I am the other half of parenting in Claremont phase. I think we're phase one. We're the phase with the houses. And I guess the one thing, I'll try to make this not famous last words, the one thing I would add is certainly as a resident, I think another, you know, and, you know, self-interest is I mean, this is a wonderful opportunity for a pathway that, you know, potentially connects us to the Greenway, et cetera. I also don't see that as that would be a bonus. I think the real thing is, again, drawing on my field of child traumatic stress and the sort of the God forbid that this should happen to any of us. The idea of kids relying on a crosswalk crossing Homestead is frankly an alarming one. I think we're fortunate to be talking about the advantages of an underpass or whatever one calls that when you're not going over the road. And that's fortunate. We're fortunate to be having this discussion in a town that takes this seriously, that takes growth seriously. But I think this is a tremendous opportunity. And yes, it affects my kids, and that's why I'm here. But a tremendous opportunity to think about not only planned growth, but safe growth. And so I would just urge you, as I'm sure, you know, you are doing about this and other things, to really think that through as you weigh the balance of kind of competing demands around permitting, et cetera. And I feel very strongly and, you know, frankly, we're at someone else's neighborhood, and I had heard about this. I hope I would have the kind of interest for children and families to say the same thing, that it's an opportunity to protect a small but perhaps a growing part of our community from, you know, traffic accidents with kids, which are certainly a leading risk and danger for young folks. So I will stop there and let the other 16 have their say.
Yeah. Scott Christie and Damon Sells. Scott's been sworn before, so go right ahead.
Okay. I was sworn in last time. In order to make this as efficient as possible, I sent you a letter yesterday. Some of you responded. I appreciate that. I just want to read that and then enter this into the public record.
Okay.
If I may. Dear Mayor and Board of Aldermen, as residents of Wexford, Williams Woods, Cates Farm, and Cobblestone neighborhoods, we respectfully request that you do not approve the Colfax connection for the Claremont subdivision. The majority of our residents support this request. We feel strongly about this issue and expressed our views in the last town hall meeting. Below you'll find a list of concerns we expressed that night. The Claremont, and these are in bullets, the Claremont builder does not care if the connection is made and repeatedly stated the only reason this connection was designed was to conform to the conductivity policy. If approved, this will cost the town in excess of $100,000 while new traffic patterns are studied and studies are demanded and new traffic calming devices are installed over these four affected neighborhoods. Significant additional funding may be necessary to modify the roads and that may meet the qualifications of the sub-collector roads. This plan will not disperse traffic, but instead will focus and funnel it through narrow streets never intended to carry a high volume of traffic. The residents across these four neighborhoods strongly stated that no unity will be created as a result of the conductivity requirement as drivers discover new shortcut from Homestead to Hillsborough Road. The only unity that will be created is to allow pedestrian traffic like cyclists, joggers, which we do support. The increase in traffic will create a hazard for the hundreds of children who are in the walk zone of McDougal Elementary and Middle School, and it will funnel the increase in traffic up Traymore, where the Wexford Playfield is located, across Wyndham Drive, where the Williamswood Top Playground is located. For these reasons, we strongly recommend you do not approve this connection. Sincerely, Scott Christie, President of the Williams Woods Homeowners Association, Ken Morris, President of the Cobblestone HOA. Ken, can you raise your hand? He's represented here. Mort Alzana, President of the Wexford HOA, and Alex Sandifer, President of the Cates Farm HOA, which he could not be here tonight. And just to wrap up in 30 seconds, I would think one of these points would be a good reason not to approve automobile traffic across this road. But you look at all these, and it's almost like a slam dunk. I mean, this should be the easiest decision all of you make tonight, or even this year. And there's three interests here. We've got the builder who's made it really clear that he doesn't care. Approve it for automobile traffic. Don't approve it for traffic. He's bleeding money. He just wants to get this thing built. There's us, and I was asked by the other presidents to speak tonight, and we represent 260 families. The reason why we're here tonight, instead of the 260 families, and some of them are represented here tonight, is because they contacted us. We didn't contact them. They told us to be here tonight. to express their concerns. The last interest is all of you. Some of you in the last election cycle even knocked on my door. Mayor, I actually spoke to you when you knocked on my door. For those I didn't speak to, you left those tricolor brochures in the crack of my door, which talked about what your interests were, that if you were elected, what you were going to do. All of your agendas were slightly different, but there was one thing that was very consistent, which is if you got elected, you were going to represent me. You were going to represent us. Well, I don't know how you're doing on all the other campaign promises, but here is your golden opportunity to represent. So when the mayor asked for this vote, there's three options. Close the road off completely, open it to pedestrian traffic, or open it up fully to automobile and truck traffic, which we are asking you to vote no on that one particular issue. The other two, that's up to you. So, please. Yes, thanks.
I have a question, and it may sound like an obvious question, but I'm asking it because I want the answer entered into the record.
Okay.
One of the reasons people tout connectivity is because for environmental reasons. If this road were opened, would children still walk to school? How would children get to school if this road were to open and traffic increased?
How would they get to school?
I
guess the same way they normally do. There's not always sidewalks on every single street.
So you don't think there would be an increase? This is a leading question. Do you think there would be an increase in the number? Yeah. Do you think there would be an increase in the number of parents driving their kids to school as opposed to the kids walking to school?
Potentially, certainly the younger children. Yeah, absolutely.
A little dense, huh? Yeah.
Sworn yet. We can't consider that. Okay, yes, go ahead.
Thank you.
All right. And Mark, I have a question for Scott also.
Quickly.
It's actually for you and... I guess your other three colleagues can't answer because they're not sworn in, but in reading your letter and your email, it made me wonder whether, and since you're representing all these neighborhoods and these families, do you think it would be helpful for those four neighborhoods, and I guess that's maybe all of them. I'm not sure if there's another one or two in that area. I'm not
potentially Fair Oaks as well, because if they choose to go down cobblestone, they're going to kind of
come
be
out,
routed
right,
out
on
that
track,
if they're heading to town.
Yeah. So my question is, would it be helpful for the town to sponsor some kind of community meeting where people in your neighborhoods could talk with us and with the planning staff, and we could look at the whole road network there and look at what the traffic issues might be and kind of, you know, we tend to, as developments come up, look at things kind of piecemeal, as we're doing tonight, and really to take a more broader and holistic look at all the issues that might arise through those communities.
We could. I mean, it's always good to talk, but I think everybody would already arrive at that meeting with an answer, and that's close off the road.
Well, you're saying
apart from that
issue.
Subsequent to this decision being made, which we'll probably do tonight.
Sure. I think that could be helpful.
Maybe you all can kick that around and let us know if you think that's something that would be helpful to your neighborhoods and that the residents would be interested in having that kind of discussion. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
All right, thank you.
Damon Sells and then Dennis Haynes will be after that.
My name is Damon Siles. I am going to speak actually in support of the connection at Colfax Drive tonight, assuming, of course, that you approve development in the first place. One argument that's been made against the connection is that it won't achieve the Connector Roads policy's goal of giving a sense of connectivity and unity to the town as it grows. The criticism here seems to be that the connection is a bad idea because it won't encourage personal interactions among neighbors, like friendly people stopping to chat and so on. I agree that those kind of interactions are good for the town to encourage, but in the context of a connector roads policy, I don't think that's what connectivity and unity means. To suggest that the policy or some application of it fails when it doesn't create spaces or opportunities for person-to-person connections is, I think, to misread the policy. The policy pursues connectivity and unity by laying out the basics in a network of interconnecting streets that meshes the various pieces of our town together with a truly public system of truly public roads. The goal here is to prevent our neighborhoods from becoming isolated and disconnected pieces with no sense of being parts of the same community. Another argument made against the connection is that it won't achieve the goal of dispersing traffic, or that the connection would result in a so-called funneling of traffic through Wexford. The purpose of a connector road is to disperse newly generated traffic. In the case of Claremont, this means sharing the traffic newly generated by the development instead of concentrating it at a single access on Homestead. The connection would also have the benefit of sharing the traffic entering Wexford and the adjacent neighborhoods via Stratford Drive. The connector road's policy envisions such dispersal will happen piece by piece as new connections are made. And finally, opponents of the connection predict increased traffic, and it almost certainly will increase traffic. After all, the northern portion of Colfax Drive is currently a dead-end street. The land use ordinance states that road connections should not encourage, quote, substantial through traffic. I'm sure that in this room you'll find many opinions about what substantial traffic is, and y'all have to decide that tonight, I guess. But while you're doing so, I hope you'll keep in mind that Colfax was built for this connection. Unlike the supposedly temporary arrangement at Autumn Drive, Colfax has curbs and gutters and a sidewalk. Traymore, Windham, and Stratford also have curbs and gutters and sidewalks, and they also have four-way stops at all the intersections. Now, it may be appropriate to consider additional traffic calming, as the Planning Board recommended, but if Colfax is not essentially a good candidate for connection already, I don't know what road is. Thanks.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
The next speaker is Dennis Haynes, and then Matthew Barton will be after that.
Hi, my name is Dennis Haynes, a resident of Wexford in Cobrell. And the primary reason I'm here is my 12-year-old daughter wanted to come to speak for the children of the neighborhood that live in the area where the connector would be. She wrote a letter. For spaces of time, I'd like to hand the letter to you and let you read it as opposed to reading out loud. Additionally, the previous guy kind of stole a little bit of my thunder in that I've been a resident for about 9 years and have come to many discussions related to traffic calming, connector policy, et cetera, et cetera. And he's the first one that I ever heard talk about wanting the connector policy. So going back to Scott Christie saying you represent us, the vast, vast, vast majority of people who are affected by these connector policies are in fact against it. So my argument would be it's an ideology that is not, that there's no data to show that in fact it does do some of the things that it states, that he talked about an entry on Colfax and an entry on Stratford, but again, they all meet in the same place. So though you may have a very short period or a short area where the traffic is dispersed, it all ends up on Cates Farm, it all ends up on Cobblestone. Living in Wexford, walking my dog, I interact with the people of Cobblestone, Cates Farm, Williams Woods, by walking the dog through that dead end, going there. If that dead end wasn't there and was in fact a through street, I probably wouldn't walk it as much because I don't walk as much towards Stratford because of the traffic and I worry about my dog and kids. So I think that, in fact, putting a walk path, bike path, encourages people to walk and bike because they feel it's safe because you have a lower traffic area and does, in fact, better fulfill the connectivity of neighborhoods and the interaction of people to people than putting a road does. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Give a copy to the press and the quarter and she'll be really happy. Yeah, really.
That's all right. Give it her.
Who's here from the press? Yeah, give one to
I'll share them up here.
No. I'll share, but yeah, it'll make
okay.
Her day.
Yeah. All right. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Haynes. Matthew.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Matthew Barton. I've been a resident of Carrboro for about 15 years now. I live in Wexford, and I'm the second person that supports the connector road policy. As the new chair of the planning board, I've been involved in many presentations and discussions, listening to town staff, listening to citizens talk about how the road grid system should be added to or not. I believe there's a lot of advantages to connectivity as long as we don't endanger safety. Adding connectivity into an area where there are no sidewalks and adding a lot of traffic certainly endangers safety. These roads were built with sidewalks. They are not built just to be children's play areas. They're roads we expect to both walk on the sidewalks, ride our bikes, and drive our vehicles, and allow school buses to drive over them, delivery trucks, every other piece of modern equipment that helps keep our civilization running. The planning board, in reviewing the proposal, did strongly support installation of stop signs at the intersections, installation of appropriate traffic calming features as needed. We also brought up a few items which may or may not have made it into staff recommendations. One was we were strongly in favor of safe pedestrian crossing across Homestead Road. The single crossing that the developer offered under the bridge by the river there did not seem adequate to us. We wanted to see one at Claremont Road. We also asked that space should be reserved for bus stops in the so that in the future, possibly some bus service might be added to that road and there would be existing space already available to the town. And last point I'd like to make is that we did suggest a play area be added into the southern side. And my recollection was that the engineer for the development said that it would be physically possible to place one such, but he was not making any kind of a commitment on the behalf of the developer. That's it. Thank you.
Matthew,
yes.
Do I recall correctly that you live in one of the nearby neighborhoods? Is that right?
I do live on Stratford Drive in Wexford.
Thank
yes.
you.
Okay. Thanks, Matthew. The next person signed up is Robert Campbell. Reverend Campbell, are you here on this item or on the next item?
This item.
Okay. You're welcome to be here on both.
I'll stay right.
I'm going to.
We'll be here with you.
We've been hearing about the connection roads. But I want to tell you about the traffic that the connection road will generate. If you have time, you come out in the morning about 8:15, going towards Chapel Hill High School. Between the hours of 8:15 and 8:35, there is more traffic on the Homestead Road now that Homestead Road can really handle. And what happened with half of that traffic, it ends up going up Rogers Road. With a connector road being added in this development, some of the traffic that normally would go all the way around and come down through Cap Vander and hit Homestead Road or either go out 86 will now come onto Homestead Road and make congestion on Homestead Road at Chapel Hill High School even greater than it is now. There's no traffic control out there. There's no police present out there. There is no safety for our children that is crossing Homestead Road now, trying to get to the middle school as well as the high school. With that said, I understand that we need communities to be connected, but at the same time, there's a safety factor. And I've always said this, safety first for our children, because they are at a point where they are in conversation as they are walking back and forth to school, to one neighborhood to another, where adults are more mindful of the things they are doing, but we can't be there for them at all time. So we got to make sure that our design incorporate a safety for our children. We need to make sure that when we place these connector roads, that we also make a suggestion to our law enforcement, police our roads. There is usually an accident between Homestead Road, this development, and Sewell School Road happens nearby every week, whether it is a major or a minor. We are fortunate that our children have not yet been hit. But if we don't begin to control the traffic, there are going to be some fatalities out there which could be avoided if we put in place safety control, traffic control, and it has to start with you all. You have to make the right recommendation. I know developers want to move forward. They want to recoup their money that invested, but at the same time, we are here about the quality of life and safety for our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thanks, Reverend Kendall. Michael Krasnoff and then James Carnahan. Michael, you were sworn last time. All right.
Is James here about the overhead projector? James Thomas, is he still here? Does somebody know how to use the overhead projector?
Anybody under 40?
I was just going to say, yeah.
Works great. Thank you. I'll try and really be as brief as I can. I've spoken to you before, and so I'm not going to say the same things I had before. My name is Michael Krasnoff, by the way. I'm a resident of Wexford. But in the intervening time, I really tried to take my time to really look into this and research, learn about it. I obviously have, as a resident of Wexford, and more so as a resident of Colfax, obviously I have some self-interest involved, but I really tried to talk to as many neighbors as I could. I've talked to people in other neighborhoods. I've even talked to people who are in favor of the connection. One resident, Matthew, has spoken tonight. I've spoken, emailed with another resident of Wexford who also feels the connection should be made, and a resident also of Cates Farm. But the overwhelming majority are against it. 87% when we did a poll in Wexford were against it. But I've really tried to listen to all sides, and I hope you as alderman will also. And I've tried to really learn about the whole issue of connectivity. There's a book that I ended up skimming through that I'd highly recommend called Streets and Shaping of Towns and Cities by Michael Southworth and Aaron Ben-Joseph, and Dr. Southworth, the professor at University of California, Berkeley, in city design and planning, and Ben-Joseph's professor of landscape architecture and planning at MIT. And their book traces a lot of the history of town development, the concepts of what is known as new urbanism, which is where a lot of the concept of eliminating cul-de-sacs. As you know, cul-de-sacs are a phenomenon that kind of arose after World War II with the development of widespread suburban growth and coincidental with automobile growth in the country. And they really give a lot of examples of new urbanism thought in their book, and I wanted to share some of their principles that they outline as new urbanist thought. And that number one is, there's really three main ones. Number one is walkability, most things within a 10-minute walk. Two, connectivity, which is obviously one of our topics here tonight. But they specifically say that requires an interconnected grid of streets, which I will try and again point out we do not have here. and a mixed use and diversity when you're planning your developments. So in other words, there's shops, offices, apartments, homes, so that there are things to actually walk to. I don't know, and if anyone can correct me, from Wexford, Cobblestone, or Case Farm, is there anything to walk to that's within walking distance? A pizza parlor, hairdresser, barber shop, dry cleaner that we can walk to. There's nothing walkable. But when you look at the communities that have been planned with new urbanism thought, they've designed all this into the community. So in other words, they don't take one piece and say, here's a road we could connect. The biggest example in this country of a new urbanist designed master plan development is that of Stapleton, Colorado. Some of you may know this. Stapleton was the airport in Colorado until 1995, in Denver, Colorado, major international airport, and decommissioned in 95. So it's a huge amount of tract of land that now all of a sudden has become like a city next to Denver. And it's all built with all these concepts included. This is just a little piece of it here. I don't know how, is there a way to focus this? But, well,
I think it's broken.
Oh, well, I think
I think it is.
Well, you can't see, but if you go onto Google Maps on the satellite, you'll see there's greenways running through here with paths, walking paths that people can skateboard and bicycle. Shopping is included. Now, a lot of it's still under development, too, because it's only been 1995 since they decommissioned the airport. So there's shops ringing this. Some of these walking paths that go here go underneath the roads. So there's safe ways to get across roads. Parks are built in and designed, so there's shops within walking distance, offices, various mixed-use apartments, single-family homes, and you can see multiple connectivity, for example, to this big road and this big road here, multiple ways out, east, west, north, south. If we eliminate a bunch of those roads, so we eliminate all this, we eliminate this, so this little section of development, I'll call this Claremont 5, and I'll call this Homestead Road. There's one way into this new development right here, and we're going to connect one road here. You can't get out any of these ways. You can't get out over here. You can't get out over here. So all the traffic is not being dispersed from this new development. It's all going in to here. You can't get out here, here, here. There's only one way in. We'll call that Stratford, and we'll call that Cobblestone and Case Farm. I think the issue is presented as if we don't think roads should be connected. I grew up in a pre-World War II neighborhood that had connectivity. I'm not against connectivity. I think just in this instance, we're not achieving that. And that's one of the points I've tried to make, that connecting roads will not connect it. We don't have, this is Homestead Road. I know it's a little fuzzy up there. And here's Hillsborough Road. And here, of course, is Wexford here. We still only come out through Cobblestone or Case Farm on the Hillsborough Road. There's nothing going over to Sewell School Road. There's nothing coming down to any of these cul-de-sacs connecting off, that come off of Pathway. We're not connecting onto Circadian. We're not connecting onto Farmhouse. There's nothing here. There's nothing here. If all that was in place or being built or planned, then one more connection I don't think would make much difference. But you can see when there are none of those connections, I think it makes a very big difference there. Connectivity is not just about driving distance. The reason new urbanists thought wanted connectivity was not just to give you a shorter trip out of your cul-de-sac to get to the neighborhood grocery store. Yes, it does that, and that does decrease greenhouse emissions. But one of the big reasons for connectivity was to reduce the need to drive at all or shorten the distance by placing homes, offices, mixed-use, retail close enough that you could walk or have a very short drive. So it's not just about shortening the drive, it's about eliminating drive, and that's through a total planning process. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. Secondly, there are, in addition to some of the pro-environmental aspects of connectivity, there are some negative aspects to connectivity as well. The book I referenced shows how when you develop with full connectivity and grid, you do indeed create more pavement, more asphalt, which uses petrochemicals, more impervious surface. In addition, you know, for example, a walking path could be created with pervious surface, cinder, crushed stone, mulch, and so on. In addition to creating increased impervious surface, increased pavement creases what's called increased superheating, particularly in summertime. So there's environmental downsides as well as upsides to connectivity, increased maintenance of the road, and increased traffic calming. The other thing I'd like to point out, people say kids don't play in the street. If they have someplace else to play, they will play someplace else, but a lot of kids grow up playing in the streets. That's what I did. I see kids in our neighborhood all the time playing in the streets. Now, in Stapleton, they have walkways integrated through all the neighborhoods and places to skateboard to, and greenways integrated through the neighborhoods. We don't have that. We don't have that here. That doesn't really exist in the development as it exists now. Studies that they cite in that book actually show that even though there are downsides to cul-de-sacs, and they are new urbanist thinkers who write the books, but they do say that studies have shown cul-de-sacs are safer when they analyze traffic accident statistics. And again, this would be a great book for you guys to read if you're going on a retreat to further discuss these issues at some point. I do feel it could create substantial traffic. Again, as we mentioned, that's a word that may be defined differently, but your 15-214 land use ordinance does say connections shall be created in such a way that they do not encourage the use of such streets by substantial through traffic. I've also listened to some of my neighbors. I understand their concerns, particularly those who live on Stratford. I think regardless of the connection, Stratford is going to see increased traffic, on Stratford coming from some of the developments up here, who instead of coming onto Colfax might go through Stratford. And I do think we might even want to think of how we can further calm traffic on Stratford as well. Lastly, I just want to make some comments on what was said at the planning board meeting that I attended to. One of the members of the planning board, by the way, was not Matthew who said this, but had mentioned that he didn't think residents understood what would happen if we didn't make connection, where the car is going to go. I really think that's all condescending. All the residents I've talked about understand this, and they know that, yes, traffic has to go someplace. The residents also, he said, would have to make a decision. Do they want a quieter, more peaceful neighborhood and a busier homestead and a busier Hillsborough Road? Well, none of us want a busier homestead Hillsborough Road, but I think most of us, given the choice, want peaceful neighborhoods. And lastly, he said, if we didn't make a connection, it wouldn't achieve the true connectivity because there's still a distinction between neighborhoods. And that kind of bothered me because that was the very word that was used, was distinction. I don't know if something slipped or he just used the wrong word, but I didn't understand that one of the purposes of the connectivity was to eliminate distinctions between neighborhoods that we can't even have distinctions here. So my recommendations are to make a pedestrian connection, consider in the future when we can develop a true grid of connecting it in the future, and plan well for that, and also consider other ways in the future. And I'm not going to go into them now, sir. I can see my time's running out, but some of the things I've learned in planning are ways we can even calm traffic on Stratford as well in the future. And
not just running.
Thank you,
Michael.
We
appreciate your enthusiasm for the subject. We're now halfway through this list, let me point out, and we've been going for over 45 minutes, so please, people, control the length of your presentations. Yeah. Yeah. James Carnahan. And then Roel Daniels, I think. Is that how you pronounce it?
Roel
Daniels. Thanks.
Good evening.
And then, excuse me one second, but we'll probably, we are going to take a brief break at about 9 o'clock, but... James.
My name is James Carnahan. I live on Oak Street. It's a through street, a connected street. I'm a member of the planning board, which, as you know, took a vote to support the full vehicular connection of Colfax into Claremont 4 and 5. As the community changes our ordinance and zoning, and this process serves the purpose of balancing the needs of folks who are in the immediate vicinity of changes which are taking place, and also the needs of the greater community, and also, importantly, the needs of the folks who are going to follow us here. And I think that this is a policy that has evolved over time with an enormous amount of deliberation by members of this community, by advisory board members, by residents, by folks who preceded you in the Board of Aldermen. And I think that there are many reasons that this connection, as a full vehicular connection, is going to be very important, particularly for the needs of the folks who are going to follow us here, who want to be able to move smoothly throughout town. I disagree with the argument that a pedestrian and bicycle connection would be sufficient. It's not that putting this road in necessarily increases single-occupant vehicle traffic. It might, but it also makes possible carpooling and van pools and small buses, and so it also supports public transportation as well as private transportation. And there's an enormous amount of research that's been done about this. I'm just going to read this to get it into the record. This is from the executive summary of Growing Cooler, the evidence on urban development and climate change by Reed Ewing et al. Quote, one of the most comprehensive studies conducted in King County, Washington by Larry Frank of the University of British Columbia found that residents of the most walkable neighborhoods drive 26% fewer miles per day than those living in the most sprawling areas. A meta-analysis of many of these types of study finds that households living in developments with twice the density, diversity of uses, and they will come sometime. These uses will come. You present us with a snapshot. You just present us with a snapshot, but a city is something that grows over time, and we're just here now, and many generations are going to follow us. What we're doing now has the greatest impact on the folks who are going to follow us. To finish, this meta-analysis of many of these types of studies finds that households living in developments with twice the density, diversity of uses, accessible destinations, and interconnected streets, when compared to low-density sprawl, drive about 33% less. Thank you.
Thank you. Raul Daniels. And then, is this Robert Dowling signed up? Robert, you're still here. Okay. I mean, good to see you, Robert.
Flip the screen just a second ago. Is that?
Yeah, she left.
Does anybody know how to flip it back? The map? Yeah, the map back up.
I thought we were like this really educated community. What's the song?
Yeah, and then,
well,
then
nobody can turn on the
then Drew moved to Durham, so.
Really?
He was living in Durham. He did a good job.
He was already living in Durham.
So I'm Raul Daniels, and I'm a resident of the first phase of Claremont on the north side of Homestead. I used to live in Carver for several years. I moved away, and then we had kids, so I moved back. We have a 3.5-year-old and a 2-year-old. I'm speaking in favor tonight of a safe passage under the Homestead Road, under the bridge. And as the previous speakers have talked about, it was shocking for me to hear about the child that was hit on the other road. One of the things to point out on this road, and for those of you that drive it all the time, there's a pretty nice curve around Homestead through here. And watching the traffic and following other cars, the speed limit is 35, but cars commonly do 45, 50 through that area, 60 here. So part of the work that I do at UNC hospitals is to design safe medication systems, and we're always looking at How do you prevent errors from happening? How do you design the system to prevent them from happening? And human factors design shows that people are going to use the easiest way to accomplish whatever they want to do. So I see this as not an either-or type of situation where it's either the white stripes across the street or the passage under. I think you've got to provide both so that adults can make that decision if they feel comfortable doing it to cross above the road. But there's a safe passage that I can teach my kids to use as they grow up, and so it's an option there. So I would at least like to present that as an option, not to look at this as an either-or, but perhaps the and, as Jackie had used earlier. And it's not necessarily folks wanting to come from the south side north. I'm actually interested in getting safely onto the Bowling Creek path. And so having that passage there would absolutely create a safe passage there. So thank you for your time.
I have a question for you. Thanks, Ralph. Before you sit down. Given your statement you made about people choosing the easiest method, and I think you were in the audience when I was asking the staff earlier about the likelihood of people going from this western portion all the way up to the creek to cross. Do you have an opinion on that?
I think it's going to be the individual's choice. Uh-huh. I think for us, we're going to teach our children to use the safe option, which is down there. The thing that you can't control, the variable that you cannot control, is the driver. So white lines across the street, and with that curve and the tendency to go very fast down that road, that I can control what I do as an individual. I can't control what the driver's doing. So there really needs to be an option there so that I can avoid what, you know, I can't control the driver to do. So.
All right. We'll see what you're in control of 10 years from now.
Your kids are 12 and 13. But,
yes,
all right.
Spoken like the true parent of a toddler. Yeah.
Evening again, Mr. Mayor. Members of Board of Aldermen, I'm not here to comment at all on whether this development application be approved or not approved. I'm here as your advisor on the affordable housing component of the development. That's all. The developer is proposing to do, I believe it's 15 or 16, uncertainty, affordable townhomes in this second phase. And much to their chagrin, the price of those townhomes for them to be affordable right at 80% for a family of three is at $112,000. They were hoping for something like $125,000, but we just do the numbers and it's $112,000. They've agreed to that. We, of course, can't sell them at that price because that's right at 80%, our maximum is 80%, so we have to bring them down. As always, we try to get to a ratio of 65%, and doing so will require about $34,000 of subsidy. I'm sorry to say. $34,000 of subsidy per unit to sell those units, but closer to $82,000. So that's a lot of money.
How many units in the driver?
15 or 16.
That's really a lot.
It's really a lot of money.
And is there
a three-bedroom, two-bath, 1,400 square feet units. It's a great price, but it's a lot of subsidy. Now, of the $34,000 per unit, we might be able to get $20,000 from the state. These won't be built until 2011, 2012. They'll be built over time. It'll all come in 1 year. It'll probably be built over 3 years. So it's not like we're going to need a lot of money at one time, but I feel obligated to let you all know what it means. Just on an aside, this is very painful for the developer because they're making use of the housing density bonus, which was designed to be a one-for-one, one affordable unit, one market rate unit. And the market rate unit is supposed to offset the cost of the affordable unit. Well, in this instance, the buy right is 75 units, I believe. They could build 75 here and without a density bonus. They're building 96, I think. So there's an additional 21, and 15 of them are affordable. and only six are market. So it's really difficult for them to make the numbers work. Right. And as we all know, the housing market is in a very difficult state right now. It's not like it was in 04 and 05 and 06 when homes were selling quickly. It was a seller's market. They had lots of margin. They could absorb the losses they take on the affordable homes. They take losses on every single house they do for us. I think we all have to acknowledge that. You have to make money on the market rate homes so you can take the losses on the affordable homes. This is not like 04, 05, and 06. I don't think that you can change anything about that, but I think it's important for me to say that to you, that they're in a very tough position because they're trying to provide 15 affordable units with only six additionals in six additional markets in a very difficult market. So I just leave you with that, and if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Okay. We'll try to plow on through before we break. Frank Strohline and then Mortimer Alzoma.
I've been previously sworn in.
Okay.
Not to take up much more time, I just think it's important for the aldermen to know how many people from the Wexford community, from all four communities in our area, are against the proposed traffic connection. Scott Christie really stole my thunder and said just about everything I want to say, but again, I think it's important that you hear from a quantity of people. And I just want to say that I moved to Carrboro to be in a safe, small community. If I wanted to be in a city, if I wanted city traffic, I would have moved to Raleigh, would have moved to New York City. I chose to come to Carrboro. And really, I can't say much better than Alderman Coleman said in Sunday's Chapel Hill News about what this has the potential for creating a funnel of traffic coming through our communities in a very unsafe manner. And besides that, you've got budgetary concerns of making traffic calming devices. If you're ready to shell out another $100,000 for that, I guess then times must be pretty good. So again, ultimately, my concern is for the safety of my two children, or children on the way, and for the kids in our community to not have this connector to go through. I hope you would do a bike and walk path so my kids can take advantage of that, and other kids can take advantage of that from both Winmore and Claremont. But I really hope you take our safety into the fullest consideration. Thank you.
Thanks. Mortimer Alzoma and then Elena Kalamanis.
First of all, I just want to say thanks and thank you for your patience for all of this. I'm the president of the Wexford Homeowners Association, and clearly the Wexford residents are greatly impacted by this connector. I've heard many good arguments as to, you know, why this policy, in particular to this connection, doesn't make sense. I've heard about the traffic concerns, the safety concerns, etc. At the last Board of Aldermen meeting, the members residing here even questioned whether this still makes sense. That historically, this has caused some great concern in other neighborhoods. I know that this was brought back to the Planning Board to discuss, and based upon their recommendation, it appears the concerns of the families who reside not just in Wexford, but in Cates Farm, Williams Woods, and Cobblestone may not have been highly regarded. In fact, some of the responses that I learned were quite concerning. As Mike Krasnov stated, so it was indicated that without this connection, traffic could not be channeled through the neighborhoods and thus make the main arteries busier. It was questioned whether residents would rather have a quieter, peaceful neighborhood at the expense of busier main roads. I am almost positive that we want peaceful neighborhoods. It was indicated that the bike and the pedestrian paths do not accomplish a sense of unity and connectivity, and I think we all know that we are more willing to stop and talk to someone on their bike or on a walk versus trying to flag someone down in their car. It appeared that safety, and I'm not sure about the safety, was not much of an argument. And I think safety should always be part of an argument. Kids play, and they don't care where they play. They play ball, and they chase balls. They chase those balls into the street. They skateboard. They ride their bikes. They chase each other. All I'm just saying is take a ride, or better yet, take a walk through these neighborhoods on a nice day, which in North Carolina is almost every day of the year, and see for yourself. More cars will be a problem. It will be a tragic problem for some unsuspecting kid, and it will destroy a parent. I don't really know if this policy in general makes sense or not, but I know that our residents feel that in this case it doesn't. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, Elena Kalamanis and Becky Hebert. Herbert. Alan has been sworn before.
This doesn't count for my 3 minutes.
But it does. Sorry.
That's fine as long as you do only take 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. I will. I'd like to encourage you to use your gavel.
You say that now.
Well, I can start talking without my charts. I did want to start with the chart that's up there. Point I want to make is that, and I think the planning board was also in agreement with this. I wanted to show the other one first. We do not advocate a crosswalk only here. A crosswalk only will not work. It has to be
Who's
weight
that you're speaking for?
I'm saying me and the, I sat in the planning board, and when they said they wanted a safe crossing, they didn't want to dictate what that safe crossing was, but at that meeting, I think everybody agreed just a crosswalk was not safe. Uh-huh. So in my opinion, something like they have at UNC on Columbia, which is a pedestrian-only light, uh-huh, works very well. You know, I know DOT does not want to put a traffic light there for other purpose, but for that. We talked about the underpass. Maybe that's a place where there could be a very effective underpass. Now, I want to bring up Homestead and High School Road. They've put the crosswalk in there and a traffic light. When they did that, they discontinued bus service to the neighborhoods of Camden and Highlands for the high schoolers because there was now a safe crossing with the crosswalk. My daughter had a bus stop at the corner of Camden. It's a minute and a half walk.
Stand closer to the mic. So.
Oh, sorry. It was a minute and a half walk from our house to the high school. It was a bus stop for a minute and a half drive because it wasn't safe. Because there is a crosswalk with a pedestrian crossing light, they took away the bus service because the Board of Education said it's now safe to cross Homestead there. Now, over here, if you do line of sight coming around here, there is plenty of time to see a traffic light at this point. So if you're coming around here, even at the speeds, you can see a traffic light. That could be a safe crossing. An underpass could be a safe crossing. Which one is mine?
Far right.
This one?
Yes.
Okay. What I want to just very quickly show you, and for some of the people who have not seen this before, this is the bridge. This is the side where they're putting the crosswalk, where I'm standing over here. It's not a very big one. This is the depth of the creek right now, our body length. This is how deep the water is across. So you can see it was about 5 feet high there. And that's where you're saying that you want your kids to be crossing. I want to show this, and I don't know how clearly you can see this. This is the crossing that's under Franklin by Estes near where Sunrise Biscuit is. This is a true crossing underneath. This is the walkway that they have there. This is, I'm down here by the creek. It's a long way. This is, here's the walkway here. This is how far down the creek is. This sign says, and I wish you could read it, it says, trail closed, dusk to 6 a.m. for your safety. So the town of Chapel Hill says, do not go along this pathway underneath this, along the creek, because it's not safe to do that at night. And now we're saying that the only crosswalk we're putting under Homestead for these people from Claremont is through an area that is alongside the creek where the town of Chapel Hill has said, don't go on this path at night, it's not safe. And this is the only pathway we're providing to these people on, you know, for Homestead. We need to get serious about the DOT giving us a pedestrian crossing at Claremont Road or an underpass there, because if the town of Chapel Hill says, don't walk on this wide path, and let me just show you how wide it is. That's me laying down here. Okay? This is a nice wide path. This is me standing here. This is a nice high road. It's deep down to the creek from up here on the sidewalk. This is a lot safer than what we're talking about underneath that small Homestead Road. So my recommendation is, please don't leave that as the only way across. It's not safe. Chapel Hill said, don't go on this path at night. We have to provide a safe crossing for the people over Homestead with a pedestrian crossing light, an overpass, an underpass by Claremont Road. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Alana. Becky?
Ebert.
If we were down at Mardi Gras, they would say Ebert.
I'm
not going to
go any
Mardi Gras.
I
don't
have any beads or anything.
And then Nan Babcock.
Quickly, I just want to reiterate what some of the folks have said from my neighborhood, which is Wexford. I want to go on record as saying I completely support and agree with what our homeowners president has said, and with most of the residents, exception of Matthew Barton, who, of course, approves the connection, and along with he and the other gentlemen that do, are also on the planning board. Special note that those are the only ones that want to support it are also on the planning board. I live on Windham and Traymore. I don't let my kids play in the street. A lot of the folks are talking about that the kids are playing in the street all the time. I never have. Some of the folks that have cul-de-sacs already, so that might be a little bit more normal. But we don't just, excuse me, I'm nervous. We don't normally let them, you know, play in the street. The problem is driving. I'm worried about the kids as well. But if you ever actually drove on those roads, on Windham, all the way up through Cobblestone, it's one-way traffic when the trash cans are out, when the leaf piles are there, when there's a car parked there. You have to stop and wait till the other car goes. It's not convenient in that way, and it's not safe. You have the teenage drivers, you have the kids that are walking or trying to bike that are wobbly to and fro around the leaf piles, around the trash cans. It truly is not safe. I think that's one thing you need to think about, the actual road. It's not a Stratford Road. It wasn't built to accommodate that amount of traffic, and two-way traffic is very, very difficult when you have those other things out there. So I just wanted to add that.
Okay. Thank you. Nan Babcock, Mike Fenton, and then Giles Blunden, and then we're going to take a quick break.
Can I just say ditto?
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to be sworn for saying ditto.
I just did.
Okay. Thank you. Mike Fenton and Giles Blunden.
I've already been sworn.
You have already been sworn, Mark.
It's good, because my other name is the crazy old coot at the end of the road. That's good. But Yeah, I live on Colfax, and it's not, this is not just a NIMBY, you know, not in my backyard decision on our part. I think what you've heard stated before, I won't try to restate that. I did write some letters, some of you may have gotten. I wake up in the middle of the night, 3 a.m., I imagine masses of water falling toward me, and I have to write letters very quickly to cover myself. But and I am wearing my my Disney shirt today, so that will cover me for that. So I just wanted to say, what I was most disturbed about was not so much the decisions I saw here, but when I went to the last planning meeting, I came out of that meeting a little bit upset, and I probably have to say something kind of firm now. I apologize for that, but I did hear someone say that this has to be approached in a holistic way, and we are being lectured that you folks need to approach this in a holistic way, and I agree with that statement. Planning. Urban planning, town planning, transportation planning is should be approached in a holistic way. That's what everyone is saying here. And we don't have to just have the future come crashing into it. I heard it said again tonight, oh, we have to get ready for the future, people will all thank us. Well, you can plan for the future. I mean, that's what we're here to do, right? Not just accept what comes, but there's planning to be done. And there's known ways of doing that, all that. This is not a mystery. It's complex, but it's not mysterious. So I think what you're hearing from the folks here, far more eloquently than I can say it, is that that there's a good way to sort of meet middle ground here for our needs, for the neighborhood, for the town, for the people, public safety, environment. I think it's all there for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Giles Blunden.
Good evening. I'm here to speak in favor of the connector policy. The public roads are for the public good, and the connector policy is for the public good. The connector policy was put in place so fewer miles are driven totally. And every connector road you connect through means that there are fewer total miles driven. All the things that go with those miles, the carbon, the pollution, the traffic, the danger, all of those are reduced. And so that is why the public good is served by connector roads. Those are public roads. They're not private roads. I mean, they're public, so they're for the public good. And it's like a balloon. When you squeeze it, it's going to come out somewhere. You know, it's going to come out here, it's going to come out here. And when you put that connector through from Wexford to Homestead, all the traffic that is not going to be added necessarily, there's going to be some traffic reduced because people going from that part of Wexford to the high school, to the Harris Teeter, to I-40, now have a shorter way to go. So they're going to be going the other way. So there's argument for reduced traffic in Wexford as well as increased traffic because of it. It will certainly provide a shorter route for some people. But that's what the connector road policy is about. I mean, it's really about the public good. The LEED program for neighborhood design gives you points for connectivity. The LEED program for neighborhood design is going to become the national standard for neighborhood designs. And it gives you points for connectivity. It's important that these connect. And every subdivision, every one that I've ever been to, there's always an argument against connectivity because nobody wants more traffic in their neighborhood. But the reality is it doesn't necessarily always produce more traffic because it provides another way out and another way in. So new. I just want to say thank you.
Thanks, Giles. All right, we're going to take a 4-minute break, and we'll be right back. Thank you. All right. Welcome back. I had two more people approach me about speaking on this item, and I'm going to recognize them right now. Adrian Himmelberg, if you'll come up to the podium, please.
Thank you for letting me add on as a late add-on. My name is Adrian Himmelberg, and I live on Cobblestone Drive. If you are familiar with the flow of traffic through these four neighborhoods that we're talking about, Cobblestone Drive is the sole unobstructed route from Hillsboro to Homestead Road. We already see an inordinate amount of traffic. I'm the mother of a 13, 11, and 6-year-old whom I walk to school or we ride bikes. I can guarantee you that if this were open to non-pedestrian traffic, being cars, we would most certainly change our method of travel to school. It's already a danger to my children. We live right at the crest or the tumult down the hill, as you will, and I am the sole traffic obstruction on our street, whether it be verbally. I have yet to throw myself physically. I do align my cars with my neighbor on opposite sides of the street so that cars have to slow down to pass my house. If this were more than just a pedestrian cut through for the Claremont subdivision, I believe the quality of life for my children would be in danger. It would no longer be safe. It's already questionably safe for them to cross the street. Usually we walk up one or two houses and then cross so we can see over the top of the hill. But I also question the man earlier who talked about allowing a shorter route through the neighborhoods. You're talking shorter from the entrance of Stratford versus Colfax is maybe two city blocks shorter, but the outflow of traffic is still the same. Given the choice of Cates Farm or Cobblestone, there is no choice. Cates Farm has speed bumps and stop signs. Cobblestone has nothing. So the traffic flow would be funneled right up our road. And I don't think that's a risk we can take. Thank you.
Thank you. The final speaker is going to be Gina Reynolds.
Hi, my name is Gina Reynolds. I'm a resident of Wexford. I just want to add a couple of comments, and I'll make them really, really brief. If we were really moving in the spirit of true connectivity in Carrboro, I believe that the back part of our neighborhood, which is kind of Autumn Drive, where it's stubbed off there or blocked off, I believe that that would be open to Barrington Hills. For some reason, that one never went through, and that seems very clear-cut to me because that would offer an alternative route to Hillsboro and then to Old Fayetteville. I would think that we would be connected to Arcadia. I would think that if we were really going for true connectivity, we would have either a bike path or a pedestrian path, something connecting our neighborhood to the high school, to Smith Middle School. I would love to not have to get out on Homestead. I'm sure anybody in our neighborhood would, so we don't really, really have true connectivity. And it seems that in the interest of a safe neighborhood and dispersing traffic, this one connection is not really going to achieve that. Another thought I have in relation to this is that it doesn't really seem like what we're doing here is urban planning in the strategic planning sense. It seems like what we're doing is considering it parcel by parcel as parcels become available for sale to developers. So now that this parcel has become available to this developer, and they're going to build so many houses, we're going to connect this bit rather than having planned this is how we're going to make our grid, and this is how we're going to connect the neighborhoods. Anyway, those are my 2 cents worth. Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
All right, thank you. I would like to make a suggestion to the board, which is we have a relatively light agenda on our next meeting, which I think is March 3rd, is that right? Next week. There's a lot of issues here and a lot for us to absorb. I'd like to suggest that we recess this public hearing until next week with the understanding that we have received all of the public spoken comments that we're going to receive. We'd resume the hearing next week and move to consideration of the application and those sorts of things. We need to keep, I think, Mr. Attorney, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we need to technically keep the hearing open so that we can have some back and forth with the applicant and or with the staff. But anyway, but that would be my suggestion rather than trying to resolve all these issues here tonight. Yes, ma'am.
If we do, can we ask staff more questions that they would not be too detailed? More questions that are sort of,
in other words, pose some questions now for them to come to.
Right. I wouldn't. I mean, that is only if it's continued. If it's not continued, then.
Then we'll just ask the questions. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question.
That would be, I think that would be fine.
About the timing, and maybe this question's for Adina, who's busy looking at something but can hear me, which is, if we continued, I mean, we're not going to learn, have any much new information in 1 week. Is there, in terms of your conversations with DOT about the crosswalk, is there any likelihood of progress in terms of a safer solution over, say, another few weeks or month as opposed to another week, or is it kind of moot at this point?
We're waiting to hear back from DOT. They had posed the division. The district engineer had referred the comments and the concerns to the folks over in the bike ped division to get their input and try to see what it is we could do. And so they're waiting to hear back from them.
And
so
do you have any sense of timing?
I don't. I mean, I check in periodically with Mr. Edwards, and I have not heard anything substantive.
Well, if we want to take advantage of some opportunity that might arise from that, I guess this question is for Mike. Would we need to delay the decision until we hear back from DOT?
Can I add one more comment to, about that? Is that I think no matter what the folks in the bike ped division do tell us, my understanding is that they're going to want to have a better understanding of the pedestrian activity that's going to be occurring across Homestead Road. And so we need to have perhaps a little time to take a look at that. So,
and to generate some data for them?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it will be modeling, I imagine, because we don't have the people. It's not built out at that location right now. So we're not going to observe the kind of pedestrian activity that I think folks are anticipating.
Yeah, so I guess my real question is that, you know, if there's any chance of having a better resolution of the safety concern, that would put me in a position where I could perhaps more likely support this application. So, and I'd like to, you know, if it's possible to get there, I'd like to do that. So my question is, in terms of Mark's suggestion that we move a week,
I don't think we'll have that in a week.
Okay.
I don't think we'd have any.
And in terms of what would be a reasonable time frame, that might be, say, sometime between next week and our next public hearing date, which would be March 24th.
It's possible. I'd like to check to see with them first to really see if that would be a reasonable amount of time. I'm just not sure.
Steve, do you have any thought about that question?
Well, I just point out, if you're looking at potentially delaying till March 24th, that's a pretty heavy agenda night. There are four public hearings scheduled for that night, both the 3rd and the 17th. Right now, March are fairly light.
So, Mark, how would you feel about looking at the 17? Just, you know, so maybe we'll get something additional from DOT.
I can't make a motion.
Oh, right, but you make the suggestion.
But, I mean, I, well.
We have questions, too.
I just want to ask him a question. They have a follow-up.
Yeah.
If we don't get the answer from DOT, are we then going to continue it again, or is it anticipated we would make a decision on the 17th?
Well, I guess I would anticipate we would make a decision on the 17th, but it's, you know, it's not up to me.
Right, I know. But I'm trying to figure out the sense of where the board is, because on the one hand, my sense is I could wait until the 17th. I don't want to wait until April or May when we're in the budget cycle.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm fine with trying to wrap it up on the 17th, if that's your answer. Yeah.
A question that maybe a follow-up to Dan. And have we lost Dina? And I don't know if this is a question for you, but I'd rather start with you. It's come up several times, this question about the potential for a pedestrian light as opposed to a crosswalk. When Dan mentioned about the information on the crosswalk, could that include further information on potential pedestrian light?
Yeah, I think what we're looking to explore with DOT is something, and, you know, what kinds of treatments would they be willing to look at, and right now they're not willing to look at any sort of anything except for the crosswalk and the advance warning signs. Mm-hmm. And so really we want to explore, you know, what are, if any, are some other options, and that could include any some sort of signalization, although I'm a little skeptical, just my understanding of how those are placed. But
It must be back last fall that in the environmental advisory group, the question came up about a pedestrian tunnel, and it's been raised again by Alana. I'd love to know, I mean, I understand DOT has some concerns about that, but I would love to know what exactly their concerns are. I know they do this in other places. What is the problem with that? Because I hear what folks are saying. I know that I was the one that raised it back then, and I never was satisfied with, you know, the answer. So
we have not posed that question to them. Would you put a tunnel under Homestead Road in this location? So we can bring that up as
please.
Well.
Please. Thank you.
Well, is there a motion as to when we might continue this hearing to?
Do we need to see if any of us want to direct any questions to staff before that, before we make that motion? Or
yeah, but I don't think you necessarily need to feel compelled to come forward with questions to the staff, but if you
think
there are some.
I just had the one early on about the additional recreation points, if there were a playground.
And I had the follow-up question about if the other side is not counted.
Right. There were two components to the
recreation
question. Yeah.
So I'll move that we continue the public hearing until the 17th.
Second.
Of March.
Of March.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we continue this public hearing until March 17th. This is with the understanding we're not going to receive more public comments at that point.
That's correct.
I think if people have points they would like to make to the board between now and then, that they should put those in writing and email them or snail mail them to us, and we will we'll enter them into the record and consider them. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Okay. Pardon?
Thank you all.
Okay.
Thank you
all. All right, we do have another permit application before us, so if you can go ahead and depart if you're departing. Okay. On to Colleton Crossing Architecturally Integrated Subdivision Conditional Use Permit Continuation Hearing.
Yeah, and we do have Jeff Cleveland at the podium to update the board from the previous continuation. Jeff.
Could someone shut the door?
Roy, can you close, or, yeah.
Please.
Somebody.
Brandy needs chocolate.
Thanks. Okay. Jeff, go right ahead, please.
All righty. I'll be very, very quick, and the slides that I have up here can be for your reference as you go through the discussion. I presume we're going to have a number of speakers set up, so I'm not going to go in huge detail right now, and I can answer questions as they come up. Everybody knows where the site is by now. Vegetation, also showing the easement, which will be discussed likely tonight some. The overview stuff, we can go back to that if anybody has any questions on it, if that comes up. These are some basic site features, greenway, play equipment, right-of-way stub out of the existing application, not including the easement proposal. This is the original application that was deemed complete when it came to the board. Still is complete with regard to the land use ordinance. Attachment E1 relates to items that the board posed questions to the applicant and the staff. You can refer to that, various things that I don't know that we'll be talking about tonight, as we have a number of people signed up to speak. It's here if you need it. Traffic calming, phasing, sewer extension, type 3 versus type 4 greenway trail, buffers along eastern property line, school bus information, FEMA flood maps, stop signs in existing neighborhoods, maintenance costs, location of the tot lot and play field, and the easement is discussed. Number 13 is struck through. The fire suppression sprinklers, the applicant is withdrawing their intent to provide those due to the economy. Mosquitoes, BMPs, box culverts, bottomless box culverts, septic failure. These are all things that are in your agenda item, and I can answer questions directly as they come up. Some questions regarding the continuation. There's some new conditions, and I'm not going to go through them in detail, but this shows you sort of where they arise. A new condition regarding the off-site extension of Raynard Road. The applicant is willing and intends to do this, improve this section. There's a condition, or there's some discussion that has to go on regarding the location of the tot lot site. Right now it's here. Possibly it could be relocated to its original position. Again, the fire suppression issue is withdrawn. The type 3 versus type 4 greenway trail discussion is something that when we get into more detail we'll deliberate upon. The applicant has provided this detail for the proposed 25-foot vegetated buffer adjacent to the eastern property line. It has 10 feet of existing undisturbed vegetation, and then an additional 15 feet of plantings. So this is something that they have shown a willingness to do. And there's a related condition for that. Here are some subjects that gave rise to some new conditions. The applicant is willing to relocate power retention cell number 7 out of the stream buffer. There's going to be some involved discussion regarding the arch versus box culvert. At this time, I don't believe we have conclusive data regarding whether a arch culvert can be used, because there are certain limits to bedrock. If the depth to bedrock exceeds 3 feet, 3 to 5 feet, I believe, we have problems with that type of technology. So there's some language in my staff report that addresses that. regarding that, and then regarding saving a tree, also I've provided a related condition. The issue of providing alternate access to Colleton Crossing via the existing driveway easement is been something that's included in your packet. The applicant has been taken direction from the board and has pursued this this option. In discussing it tonight, it would be helpful if we would keep this separate from the original complete application, because there are issues with this that are incomplete regarding stormwater and various road standards that haven't been resolved yet. So this is something that the applicant can speak to in greater detail. These are the new conditions, 25 through 31. And I'm not going to go into much detail in them. A lot of it's just administrative and somewhat technical. And then if you need them, the proposed conditions, the ones with the stars next to them need adjustment regarding, depending on which kind of culvert design is chosen, and so forth. And then here are the advisory board comments and recommendations for your reference if you get into this discussion, and so on. And there's some other addenda, street lighting, fire hydrants, and so on. So any questions? Dan?
I'm interested in learning more clearly what the unresolved issues are involving that eastern access road across the easement.
Well, I can speak to a few of these. Stormwater is one issue.
And how does that pertain?
Well, we don't have revised stormwater calculations. So
that's just a matter of time to do that revision then?
It's a matter of time, and we would assume that the existing wet detention pond could handle the additional capacity, but we don't know. They have to approve that.
And how long does it take to determine that?
The 10-day review cycle can accomplish a lot. So it all depends on Mr. Post and Associates, how their workload is. But they've been very very quick.
And are there other issues?
If you look at, I believe it's attachment U, you'll see in response, the applicant has provided a response to NCDOT comments. And there's also a memo that I believe was forwarded to the board from Adina that pointed out a few of the outstanding issues. And I invite you to explore those.
Could you review those for me now, if you don't mind?
I don't have the memo, but I can say that one of the issues of import was to realign driveway or the access to provide better separation between existing the curb cut and existing intersections.
Could you bring that picture back up and show us where that is?
Okay. I almost wonder if I shouldn't have Adina talking about this.
I think maybe you should, yeah. She wrote the memo.
May I interrupt for just a second for clarification, please?
Sure.
My understanding was that the reason this was moved to tonight from the last time we met was because it was going to come in with this new access, and that was kind of changing the whole picture. And yet here we have a 9-point reason why that's not going to be a good thing. So
I don't understand what you're saying.
What I'm saying is, are we ready to make this decision this evening without the information
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out.
Right.
You need it.
Right.
Because my own feeling, I feel like I've already heard enough testimony that without this road, I think there are serious safety concerns
right.
that I don't believe at this juncture, and I may hear other things that persuade me later that that I would vote to approve this. But with this road, that may be different. That's well, why I'm interested in learning, focusing
I'm,
on this.
I'm kind of backing you up because what I'm asking is, I thought the reason that we were meeting tonight was because I was expecting to have a plan for the access road. And this is nobody's fault. This is just kind of what is. Instead, we have nine reasons why that road's not such a great idea, including number nine, which is its impact on the surrounding property owners.
What are the nine reasons? Where do you see that?
Attachment U.
What is it? It's the letter from
U3.
Who's that from?
DOT.
It's from the DOT.
Letter. Okay.
Well, and then it has these nine reasons.
Right.
And
well, that's the question is, can these reasons be addressed? I mean, it says no drainage is provided. That's
right.
Not a terminal. So go ahead, Mark.
Well, Lydia looked like she wanted to interject a thought into this discussion.
You made the point that the direction came from the board to pursue this access easement, and I just want to kind of make it clear, I don't remember the whole board ever directing the developer to pursue this access easement. But in my view, as a starting point, before we even review any of this, I'd like to hear from the two landowners over whom the access easement goes, just to find out what conversation has gone on with them and their standing in this, because I think that's the initial starting point of whether we even consider this easement.
Okay. Let me hear Adina's response to Dan's question, and then I like your idea that I would like to hear some more discussion about. I mean, in my mind, there's still some question about whether there's any legal right to use this access.
Yeah, I want to ask Mike that next.
Okay, well.
Because we have an opinion from the applicant's attorney that there is right.
Right. But. Okay. Go ahead.
Sure. So the question is, what are the outstanding issues?
Right.
And so the applicant provided responses to all of DOT's nine points, and I believe that was emailed to you, I believe, yesterday.
Okay, but that's not here tonight, that response?
I don't think so. I'm sorry, that was probably my error. I did not make copies of that.
I mean, I don't know who puts things in our place or what, but, and I can't speak for everyone else, but for me, if something's not in the packet, then I come to the meeting and I don't have it.
Right.
So, and here you're wanting me to reference something. So, I guess, Steve, you know, if whatever dots need to be connected to make sure materials are here when we need them.
Well, we appreciate that we will try to do better. I will point out we had a ton of requests in about 2 days that we were trying to respond to, and again, we'll try to do better with that.
It's one of several ways in which this issue may not really be entirely right. But anyway, go ahead.
So out of those responses that the applicant provided to DOT's comments on the proposed private road access, we identified just a couple of items that were still outstanding that require DOT now to sort of respond and say, is that adjustment to your design, is that going to say, okay, Now we're ready to grant you this driveway permit. And so if you'd like, I can just quickly run through these if that's what you
the
want.
Ones that you consider still unresolved.
Right. So, sure. They do comment that in the applicant's response, they acknowledge that in order to respond to numbers 1 and 3 on DOT's comments, which I believe is in attachment mm-hmm. U, they would likely need to acquire land or permission from the underlying landowners in order to make those adjustments. And if I am misspeaking, I would ask the applicant to correct me. Items number 2, 4, and 6, the applicant has provided solutions to those, and again, we're just awaiting DOT's further feedback to those solutions. See what the next one is. You know, Jackie pointed out, there is number nine, which is something that needs to be explored, and we agree that with...
What's number nine? I'm sorry.
To continue the conversation with the underlying landowners.
Okay.
And then there's item number seven, which deals with the proximity of this road to the intersection with Huntsman and Tally Ho.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite close, and so no matter where that road ends up being, it will still be, I believe, closer than the DOT guidelines, and we would just like DOT to comment on that as well to see if there is, if other improvements to that intersection would compensate for that proximity.
Yes, ma'am. And when do you expect to hear from DOT with regards to the unresolved issue?
Yeah, I believe they probably received these responses yesterday, which is when we received them. So, I could hazard a guess, but I'm really
I wouldn't want to put you in that position.
And I think the end of this, following number nine, is also really important, where it says, please note that private roads are ineligible for state maintenance. In addition, NCDOT will not be in a position to accept any proposed public subdivision streets within the town limits for state maintenance. That kind of adds a whole nother. We'll never be able. I don't know if we're ready for this.
What does that mean, that second statement Jackie read, that NCDOT will not be in a position to accept any proposed public subdivision? Surely they don't mean any.
They just mean that it's going to be within the town limits, and so like any road that's within the town limits.
Any town road would be our road.
Okay. They just wouldn't be doing the maintenance on that road.
No, that makes sense.
Okay. Are the owners of lots 10 and 11 here? Okay. Their representatives are here. Okay, hold on just a second. Is Mr. Rooks here? Oh, there you are. Okay. I think I would like to, Mr. Rooks, I'd like you to come up for just a minute if I could. We're going to, I know this is an unusual order of discussion here, but the validity of the access easement seems like a very critical threshold issue here. So can you speak to that? In other words, there has been a driveway back to that property. I observed that driveway back around the time that your clients purchased this property. I walked down it and walked around on that property several years ago. But what is the status of your client? What is your client's legal interest in that driveway? And
if you will look at the most recent letter I've written to the town about this, I outline the history of this tract,
mm-hmm.
and the surrounding tracts,
mm-hmm.
and in which I explained that this tract was one of four created in a partition of family land in 1961, the Walker family. This was an interior landlocked tract. Other tracks that were part of that partition had frontage on a state road. When First Tally Ho Corporation, the folks who did the surrounding subdivision on both the eastern and northern side of this lot, started putting together their assemblies to do their subdivision, some clever person realized
I'm sorry. Were you sworn at the... You were sworn at the last hearing.
I
apologize.
Was.
Yes. Okay.
But some clever lawyer representing First Tally Ho recognized what all of us learned in Property 101, which is a landlocked tract, which is part of a larger tract, has a right to enforce access out to a public road if it's left landlocked.
Right.
And so I think the developer, First Tally Ho, realized that this lot, which was landlocked as a result of that partition, had that right, that potential claim. And so First Tally Ho actually negotiated the easement that connects the Collinton track out to Tally Ho Road.
Okay. And what was on the landlocked parcel or parcels at that time?
I think there was a house on the landlocked parcel. There was only, that was one, there was a landlocked parcel.
There was, okay.
There was a house.
All right. Okay. And okay, do you have more to say about that?
Oh, that's the history, and that's why I think, number one, that there is a right of access from the Collinson property out to a public road.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is probably this access here that was created. Mr. Tebow, my partner, has already opined that he believes the owner of the Collinson tract has a right of access. I will agree with my partner's opinion. There's an opinion letter about that. Mm-hmm. I went into, because the staff asked me the question, if could a development be done on that subdivision, on that property, on the Collinson property, where serving all 39 lots potentially.
Right.
That would be the question of whether that was within the scope and burden of the easement right. that was created. And that's what my letter addresses. You know, there's not black letter law on that point, but as I indicated in my letter, I think there is good authority that probably a court would decide that it could be done.
Okay. Okay. You're welcome to come back in a little bit, but why don't you have a scene for a okay. minute while we discuss this a little further, because I guess I'm... Lydia, do you want to comment on this issue at this
can
point?
Can we hear from, which
okay.
makes more sense? To
well, those of you who are own or represent the folks from lots 10 and 11, if you would, I would be interested to hear your perspective on this issue at this point, if you're willing to come up and speak to us. Yeah.
We were not notified when we had the last hearing back in January. Prior to we were not notified that there was going to be a continuation hearing. And the reason for the continuation hearing, as Ms. Geis has suggested, was to give the developer an opportunity to see if there was some other way to access the Colleton property. I guess my concern is, well, I have several concerns, obviously. First of all, there has been no communication with the developer, and this is a three-party easement at this point now, because the developer owns a third, the Kaplans own a third, and the Hingevelles own a third. And I feel like the original DOT requirement that there be further distance between the Huntsman Court and the driveway easement for a development, this was not far enough away. It did not meet the 400-foot requirement in terms of distance. My other concern is I don't understand why the planning department would have requested of the developer to further explore an easement, and it's somehow ended up in my backyard. And I have a real issue with that, because I thought that this had all been resolved when there was original discussion back in 2006. That no, using this easement for access to developing was not a proper use of this easement. It would burden the easement. It's a safety issue. That our thought was that the original easement was to keep the one building, the house that was behind us, which has since been burned down, keep it from being landlocked and that it was to be able to provide service for utility to get to it. So I have some real concerns that as a newly annexed property owner and taxpayer, that I am not being heard. I am not being communicated with, and I am very upset.
I want to ask you, so since our last meeting, since the night that the meeting was continued, has anyone from the developers been in contact with you at all?
No. We were never told that that it was going to be this easement that was going to be considered to be accessed to get to the property for building.
Okay.
And are you in?
I'm lot 11.
You're lot 11. So
I'm on Tally Ho.
Okay.
Blow it up here, but I'm 11. We're 11.
Right.
So right.
Yeah. Okay. Jackie.
Just to follow up on Lydia, then if the developer didn't contact you, how did you learn about this? Just word of mouth on the street, or how did you learn?
I learned about it through going to, I'm trying to think how I learned about. Well, first of all, I didn't even know that we had gotten, that there had been a letter from the developer's attorney that had been sent. We never were a party or got a copy of that. We were never informed that the DOT had been requested to respond. Some of the information that you are missing in your packets, which very directly affects us, we knew nothing, I knew nothing about until tonight. So I am very distressed.
I am so sorry.
I am really upset.
Yeah.
I've got a splitting headache.
I am so sorry that you have been left out of the loop, and I'm so sorry that it's causing you that
distress.
That much distress. I think, speaking for the town, I'm really sorry.
Plus, I've had an added thing, is my husband has been in the hospital, and
you're dealing with this.
And I'm feeling it all. Excuse me.
Okay.
Thank you, Kay.
Thank you, Ms. Hangeville. And are you bear some relationship to Lot 10?
I do.
Okay, come tell us about it. Did you speak at the previous hearing?
I did.
Okay, what's your name? I'm sorry. Okay.
I am the daughter-in-law of the owners of
Juice
Lot 10.
Okay.
Herb and Sid Kaplan. They are my elderly in-laws. I guess I don't know what you want me to say first. I had this all written down so that I would do it right, but
well, you can just do what you
go ahead. Okay. I want to thank you for letting me speak. Certainly, this is a long night. I'm very fortunate, I think, to live in Fox Meadow. My family's lived there since '86. I live on 1215 Tally Ho, and I know that Jeff has some photographs of an orientation map that'll show the big rain last summer in my backyard. So I have two stakes in this. I do represent my in-laws who own the home on Huntsman Court, with the one with the easement running through it. My home is down the road. I wanted to talk to you about the traffic there and how there's blind curves and straightaways where cars go faster and you have to jump off the road if a UPS truck comes in a car. And it's those roads are little, so you really have to be careful. And there's a time of day when the sun slants down so that you really can't see any pedestrians on that road when you're coming down. And if more traffic would just propel itself through the neighborhood if Colton Crossing development were allowed to develop as it's proposed. It certainly would increase traffic would certainly pose safety hazard to those of us that walk and bicyclists. And there was a letter to the editor in the January Chapel Hill newspaper about how the developers bought this tract on speculation so that they could build maximum density and gain access through the utilities easement on land owned by my in-laws and their neighbors. When it was found originally, and this is in 2006, and I think I went to lots of different places to try and gain information about what I could do to help my in-laws. And it was found to originally be unacceptable to both the property owners and infeasible as a road for a plan, especially when the density wasn't altered. I do have a letter with a legal opinion contesting the use of the easement on lot 10 and 11 as it's proposed to the MBI developers. And I'm not going to read it to you because I don't want to bog this down, but because my intent is really to be focused. And
could we have a copy of it, then, of the letter?
This gentleman can have the original.
Okay. Trish, could you make some copies of that for us, please? Thank you.
And briefly, in response to the easement access, I do believe there are two parts to this. One is the part that started in 2006 that went until the last meeting when we realized that since you all adjourned that, gosh, there was going to be another shot at maybe this easement trying to get another entryway into this development. And at first the proposal that was presented in your original application was, okay, easement for utilities and maintenance of those utilities, Owasso would come in, put the water in. There was even mention of that easement for emergency access, in which I had already talked to Captain Crabtree, and I said, what would it take not to have an emergency access? And he said, sprinklers. Well, I guess sprinklers are out now. And this was going to be only temporary access for this emergency access, because when the road that was going to connect to the UNC properties came through, this easement could be shut off as an emergency access because you'd no longer need it. That was my understanding. Now, the second part of this easement saga is on the agenda tonight, and this focus on the easement was never a part of the original permit. The burden and scope of the plan is dramatically increased. This was never disclosed or discussed with my family or the neighboring property owners. There's been absolutely no communication in essentially 3 years, except tonight there is a message on my answering machine from Jim Melville asking me to call him in his office. I never got that message because I didn't come home till late. I don't know what he wanted.
I do.
Tell me. Yeah. And defining this easement as a private permanent driveway into this development would be a burden to this easement. My in-laws are 83 and 90 years old. They don't have money. I mean, this house is their money. It just seems incorrigible to me that they would go for this kind of a road. But anyway, this would also not only burden the road, but it would also burden the safety of the entire neighborhood. There's limited sight distance, not enough time to react to speeding cars or pedestrians. There are 14 lots affected in this section of Tally Ho and Huntsman Court right now, where the magnitude of the risk goes up from 14 versus 53 lots when you include the proposed 39 lots. The developer is asking you to allow the development of housing that is in an acreage of a 6 to the 10th as big as the 0.93 average acreage of the lots that surround it right now. My family, my in-laws, and my neighbors need your support and help with resolving these issues and other than the easement issue, and this application is inconsistent with the town of Carville's reputation. I really hope that you deny this application and ask the developers to be included in being better stewards of the land, the surrounding neighborhoods, the safety of its current residents, and to leave positive growth in this area. This is not the area in which they live, and they will only develop and leave. Please evaluate the safety risks and look into these easement issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Um,
This is a mess.
I mean, I have quite a few people signed up to speak on this issue, but I guess I'm wondering how pertinent it is to have a whole lot more discussion of these issues, because to me, I feel like this question of whether the developer's proposal really does or doesn't include a second connection to Tally Ho, is that right, Tally Ho, or not, is a fairly critical issue, and
that isn't solved.
I think you characterize it as a question of whether it's what the scope of the burden is on the easement. If we can pardon the lawyers in the room while we get all technical and stuff, but that type of easement that arises so as to prevent a parcel from a grantor from landlocking himself. There are quite a few. That is a very restrictive doctrine that creates that type of easement. It only arises in a situation, if I recall from my first semester of property, in a situation in which it is strictly necessary. And I think that, by extension, at least at common law, I don't know exactly what North Carolina's rule is. The scope of the easement is restricted as well to what is strictly necessary. And I don't know how to evaluate this application without understanding, whether or not they really have a right to access here.
Let me try to address that.
Please.
And we do it. What we've done in the past with these sorts of issues, and this is not the first occasion in which we've had an applicant present a proposal for a property to be developed, and some neighbor or someone objects and says that some portion of the property is not known by them or is crossing on my property or I've got an easement over or something. And that puts us in the kind of position that's very, very difficult, as this demonstrates. We've got two very competent attorneys, one saying we've got the right to do this, the other attorney saying, no, we don't have the right to do this. And I've just received this letter, but that's the gist of Chris Willett's response. Mm-hmm. What we've done in the past is to say what our ordinance says is that we accept development applications from people who have the legal right to do what it is that they purport to do. So we've said, of course, in the normal situation, that doesn't become an issue. Someone submits a property or an application for something that they own, and typically nobody can contest it. So we're dealing with the abnormal situation. But what we said is, look, the town is not a court of law, and certainly I'm not a judge, and neither are many of you. And so we do not want to be in where there are conflicts of claims with respect to who has what right to do what on a piece of property. It's not appropriate for us to make a determination. So the position we've taken in the past, for better or for worse, is to say if we get an opinion from an attorney, a licensed attorney in North Carolina, saying, along with whether this kind of thing comes up, we look at it and say, well, it seems sort of prima facie reasonable, and the attorney says, my applicant client has the right to do what we're purporting to do. Our position that we've taken is to say, okay, that for us to say on the basis of some objection that we will therefore not go forward with your permit application until this gets resolved puts us in a position of basically putting their property completely on hold at really no cost to the party who's objecting. In other words, if all they need to do is just say, well, we object, we don't think you have that right, and we say, okay, well, there's an objection, we're going to essentially resolve that objection in favor of, not in favor of the applicant, in favor of you, because there's a question, so you all resolve it and litigate it for 2 years and come back later on. That didn't seem to be a very good approach. So what we've done in the other alternative is not entirely satisfactory either. But that's an alternative that we've done in the past, is to say, okay, well, if the applicant submits to us an opinion from an attorney that says you have the right to do this, someone wants to challenge that right, it's easy enough for them to go into court and challenge it, and that will put the development on hold, obviously, because, I mean, not from our standpoint, but, I mean, as a practical standpoint, it'll put it on hold. And that's the position we've taken. Now, again, I recognize that in one sense, that then puts the objectors in the position of sort of having to get a lawyer in to challenge it, which is not an entirely satisfactory resolution either. But either way we go, there's no good Solomon-like solution. I can tell you that, I mean, I suppose you could ask me, what do I think? But what I think is completely irrelevant because I'm not the judge who's going to decide this question. And clearly,
let me ask you this. Do you think there's a really clear-cut answer to this question?
No.
Right.
I don't. That's the reason, I mean, that's what I'm saying. We sort of take the position that it's sort of a prima facie rule. In other words, you know, if someone comes with no justification whatsoever and says, well, I own this property, I don't have a deed for it, I don't really have, I can't show you anything, but I just think I do, obviously we're not going to, you know, go to that extreme. But that's why we've said, if, you know, if we've got, and of course, typically it's a, this presents an even more unusual situation because it's not a question whether the property can be developed at all or not. It's the question of what, how this particular access, you know, either does or does not give them the right to do what Mr. Rook says it does. His partner has given us a letter a year or two ago saying that there is an access right there. We have an easement. David, the question we posed to him was posed as a result of, I'm not sure exactly how we got to the point where it was suggested to these folks that they need to explore this as an alternative, but nevertheless they did. They came to us and said, is this an alternative? And so then I contacted David and said, well, look, the original opinion that we've got really doesn't address the question of the extent of the easement. So please address that. He has done so. You know, his opinion is that that easement is broad enough to encompass the opportunity to use this as a private access for the 39 homes. Clearly, that's the kind of question about people can argue all day, and at some point, if it gets in a court of law, some judge has to make a determination one way or the other. But it is, you know, it's all about intent. It's all about trying to read the tea leaves, you know, and there's no way I could look at this and say, oh, that's clearly this way or it's clearly that way.
Right.
And no way that I would want to be in that position, and really no way that you could be in that position. So
right.
With all of that said, I don't think it's up to us to decide the legal question. So you really almost have to decide which are you going to do, which way you're going to go, assuming there's any interest in it, in for complete reasons completely apart from whether they have legal access. I mean, there may be reasons why you'd say this is a grand idea or this is a terrible idea. The staff has not ultimately made a determination as to whether or not it complies with our ordinance or not.
Right.
Boy, that was long-winded. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm used to it. Yes, ma'am. And the manager.
I don't think anybody has purposefully done anything wrong. And just kind of trying to make pragmatic decisions, but we're Carrboro, and we're better than this. You know, I don't think anybody in this room wants to be in the position of putting a long-time couple who are in their retirement home in what they think is a beautiful area near their kids, with one of them not feeling real great these days, and to put a couple like that through a year or longer of like trying to figure out whether there's going to be a road forced down their property. I mean, that's not who we are. I mean, there's got to be a way not to do that. I am incredibly disappointed, as I think other people are, that this lady found out about this, not from us, not from the developer, not from the developer's attorney, but just by word of mouth on the street. You know, I don't care what the procedures are. Like, we're better than that. And so there's got to be a way where we don't put her through months and months and months of uncertainty and tension as she's dealing with a family illness. I mean, there's got to be a way not to do that. I'm not going to be a part of doing that. And I don't think anybody on this board wants, or on our staff, or on the developer's staff, wants to do that. We have got to figure out a way to do this that protects the dignity of somebody's residence and their right to live without feeling fear of something bad happening soon. We can do that.
Mr. Manager.
brief, but I think it's important that perhaps I give a little more perspective to how we got here tonight. I was asked, I guess, just prior to the last public hearing in January by a couple of board members, do you think the applicant might be willing to take a look at trying to provide some other outlet out of this development? And if so, maybe we ought to look at continuing the hearing. I had our planning staff contact the applicant. They were willing to take a look at another option. This looked like it was probably the best option. They came back. We got information from DOT. There was a lot of stuff that had to be worked through to see if it was even technically possible. But at least there was, it wasn't an absolute no. We had a legal opinion from Mr. Rook saying we think we can do this. So it was at that point we said, okay. And I, you know, I was even asked, should we consider continuing this hearing to another time to give the applicant an opportunity to do even more work on this particular option? And I suggested that just because of what's happened tonight, that there really hadn't been a public discussion of this option, that it would be appropriate to air it out to see if there was any interest from the board as a whole in pursuing this. It didn't make sense to ask the developer to go spend money on stormwater calculations or do a lot more engineering work if the community and the board decided this wasn't an option to explore. So no decisions have been made, and the applicant was asked to do this. They didn't initiate this.
Let me ask if I can ask a question to the applicant. Were there any other connection options, or are there any other connection options that you've looked at or that could be, you know, potentially feasible?
No. And Phil Post is here as well, and he can speak on behalf. No, there isn't.
Phil, come up for just a minute. We won't hold that against you. Phil, yeah, Phil's already. Oh, I don't know. Is he? Is he? He's not on this list.
Yes.
No, it says Tim Smith with Phil Post.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that doesn't mean.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yes, sir.
I guess just for one example, I mean, isn't there? I will take notice of the fact that there's another house that stands between the Cotton Tract and Tally Ho Trail that is for sale right now. For example, did you all look at that, at the possibility of making a connection through that property?
No, we haven't looked at that. You know, we began, I think the manager's statement is accurate. It seems like it was about 30 days ago, we sketched up some conceptual information about, boy, somebody's got my notes here. You better not.
Did I see Chilton on there?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that's what I said.
Put that back up.
Oh, I was a little angry, wasn't it? I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor.
No.
At any rate, we've pursued this. We had the 9 comments from the Department of Transportation. We kind of winnowed the 9 comments down to 2. I mean, but there's still, it's fair to say that we haven't, but we think we're within a striking distance on solving the drainage problems and the DOT concerns. But it hasn't quite come to pass yet. So I don't know if I'm answering your questions, but we've spent the last 30 days.
There's a letter in our packet from Mr. Rux that makes the point that speaks to the issue of acquiring a lot. Mm-hmm. And they basically appear to be daunted or perhaps stymied by the restrictive covenants in Fox Meadow. I mean, I don't know if there's a question you might raise about that.
But no, I mean, come address that point. What, is there an attachment number on that?
Yeah, it's attachment O.
Some time ago, I was asked by the staff to comment on whether the option was there of acquiring one of the lots. And I looked at the restrictive covenants for the development, which say that the lots have to be in residential use only. I then looked, did a little research, and there is a North Carolina case more or less directly on point saying if that's what the covenants say, then anybody who takes a lot and uses it as an access way to an adjacent subdivision is probably in violation. And any owner in the subdivision would have the right to object and prevent its use.
And is it your opinion that to be able to do that, you would have to get 100% approval from every single yes. owner in every single phase?
And the problem here is that there is not a provision in the covenants that allows even for an amendment to take that into account. So, yes, it was 100%. Mm-hmm. And that was the problem with that. Now, it may be that, you know, if something could be, you know, people could all agree to something, then people could all agree to something.
Yeah.
It's never been my experience that we get 100% agreement on anything. And let me go back to, Mr. Mayor, a question you had raised about the, there's actually a formal grant of easement that's being relied upon. It's not a way of implication. There's actually a formal grant of easement. For an access easement and for the installation and maintenance of utilities. And my point about that is the developer realized that this interior lot potentially had that claim. So the developer, in order to protect his development, which is the development along Tally Ho Trail, went and got the easement done and located it. So there's a formal grant of easement, and it appears on the plat. It appears on the plat that these adjacent owners had when they bought it.
You know, on that plat map, there also is another private road showing on that plat map.
There was initially, and then that one was later withdrawn. Now, we're trying to read the tea leaves about what Tally Ho was thinking, and I think maybe Tally Ho was thinking at some point it would move the access way from this interior lot up there. And I'm gathering, for whatever reason, that didn't work out because there is a subsequent plat that withdraws that easement. But you're right. Initially, it was there.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Can I ask a question about this Chris Willett letter?
Sure.
And I don't know.
I haven't even looked at that yet.
And any of the attorneys in the audience can answer this question.
I'll decide whether you're right about that, but go ahead.
Okay, so I'm looking at the very last paragraph on the first page where it says, we do not believe the easement in question can properly be used for private construction access easement, et cetera, et cetera. And then it quotes language that says the easement was only granted for ingress, egress, and construction and maintenance of utilities. So it seems like the quote is exactly contradicting the statement that he's saying the quote proves. But I must be misreading it since it was written by an attorney.
I think the quote is going to the utilities rather than to.
But doesn't ingress, egress, the way it's written is ingress, egress are separated by commas from and for the construction maintenance of utilities. So.
You would enjoy law school. You really would.
That's my mother called me. You know.
Is
that a dependent clause? Or
That's the reason why we don't get into this.
Yeah.
Because we can't decide that.
That's right. So because, I mean, we could get the attorneys 2 years, and they could argue for as long as you wanted to let them speak about why one determination or the other is the better determination, and that's why I suggest, that's why we kind of took the approach that we did. And as I said, there may be plenty of reasons why you decide that you just don't want to entertain this as an easement, or that you're not as an easement as an access way, or that you do. But I would not. I mean, I think, based upon the way that we've handled in the past, this sort of clears that hurdle for us and takes you out of me, out of the business of trying to decide a legal question which cannot be resolved by us.
Right.
So, Mark, I wonder if we should ask the applicant if, given everything they've heard this evening, if they want to continue to pursue this. I mean, irrespective of whether we do.
Well, except that I think they're here to hear whether we want to continue to pursue it is okay. sort of the issue. Did you have something you wanted to jump right in with?
Well, it was sort of a process, so maybe I'll get home before midnight. And other people out in the audience can get home before midnight. I think the issue is whether or not we're going to, the first question we need to ask is whether or not we're going to entertain the easement. And the second question is, are we prepared with the information that we know now to make a decision tonight or to continue? And that seems to me the two questions that need to be resolved.
Well, let me try to give you my answer to those two questions, which is, I think if the legal issues or the potential issues between and among the three different landowners could be resolved, that it seems like an interesting possibility to make that connection there, and that this application does look, you know, considerably different to me with that connection than it does without it. However, I'm not comfortable with the notion of moving toward an approval of this application or some version of it without knowing the answer to that question. And I feel like if we approve, if for example, hypothetically, some version of this application were approved, saying you can build this subdivision, but you must make both of these two connections, one to Raynard and one through this easement, then what we're doing is shifting some burden over onto the owners of lots 10 and 11 to go to court and fight with Melville Builders about this issue. And I'm not, I don't know, I'm not very comfortable putting that burden on them.
Well, let me respond to that.
Yeah.
It was never my suggestion to put the burden upon.
No, I know. I'm not trying to put those words in your mouth.
Landowners.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, if we, you know, I think the question really is, does the developer or the applicant want additional time to find out if he can get another access?
Mr. Mayor.
Why don't you answer her question?
I mean, I don't know, because we're not going to make the decision about whether or not they have a right to the easement.
Correct.
We've already gotten excellent legal advice.
All the insight you can share with us on reading the tea leaves tonight would be helpful. But if clearly this developer has responded to staff on something that, you know, made a good faith attempt to bring something forward, it is not fully developed. There may be ways still to resolve it. We've not fully explored it. We don't know the response to DOT on a couple of fairly critical issues. And so it might well be appropriate for you to have a more fully developed proposal before you if you are inclined to consider a more fully developed proposal, if that made sense.
And yeah. Are you thinking that a more fully developed proposal might include some effort to gain support from the immediate neighbors?
When I read the tea leaves, I see that as a pretty strong indication that we should.
Yeah. But you read them correctly.
Well, but, you know, I mean, I don't want to say, because we haven't gotten into the discussion of whether or not in any fashion we would approve it. And, you know, I don't want to say one way or the other, but I think we need some sort of structure to bring resolution to the application. So both, there's a balance between both the applicants and the surrounding neighborhoods. You know, at some point, we have to make the difficult or not difficult decision about whether or not we're going to approve whatever they applied for in the fashion that they have. And I guess for the board is, do you really want to hear more? And I'm not pushing any way.
You're seriously just asking.
Yeah, I'm seriously asking. And if we're going to wait, how long are we going to wait for the application to be fully developed, so to speak?
Well, I can answer for my part, which is I'm interested in hearing more about this connection, but I want to I want it to be, I don't want to be the arbiter of whether it's a, whether it's a valid easement, and I can't see approving the development and relying on that without there being some agreement, but, you know, without the cloud having lifted over what the situation is with this easement. And I think there, you know, at least hypothetically, it's possible that y'all could work something out, but obviously that's not going to happen tonight. So that's where I'm coming from.
Well, I would like to. I mean, if the applicant wants time to work this out, which he just said he does, then I would like to see what they can bring back. And my suggestion would be that we continue this public hearing until April to give ample time for all those complex, multi-party questions.
As I did before with the last hearing.
Yes,
I agree with you. I'm going to ask the board that if we push it to April the 17th, and whatever, or whatever the date is in April.
20.
Because so, I don't know what it is. So I apologize. We will not be sitting up here saying we need additional information. At some point, we have to make a decision.
We do.
Well, that's true. Let me point out though too that there are 18 people signed up to speak tonight. I'm not anticipating that we're really going to hear from them tonight. But I guess point being, you're going to hear from them April 28th if you don't hear from them tonight. So.
I don't have a problem with that, but I think
I just want to be clear about what
right. But I think the applicant and the people who are here to speak tonight, there needs to be some expectation that we don't do this again in this fashion. It's nobody's fault, really. So it's nobody's fault. But what I'm saying is, the rubber will hit the road whatever date in April it is. At least for me, I don't know about the rest of you.
Mm-hmm.
And what I don't want to have happen is we get back here the next hearing date and we're at exactly the same spot.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
The landowners still don't want to, you know, grant on the easement because they have a legal opinion that says otherwise.
Well, that could be. I mean, that could easily be what happens. And if that happens, then I think we're forced to consider the application, you know, without any, you know, without there necessarily
without
being
that
a connection.
Without that rub.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I mean, something that I think is clear to me, something will help you gain support from the different parties that you need, is for you to consider a significant reduction in the number of units they're proposing. Otherwise, I think...
Well, we'll let you discuss that with the neighbors.
Thank you.
Mr. Brooks.
So we need a motion.
I made a motion. I called it a suggestion. It is a motion.
A motion, okay, to recess this public hearing until April 28th, or whatever that Tuesday is.
Wait a minute. I will not be here the 28th.
Okay.
I have to go take care of another elderly father. So, this is just, it's painful. It's been since 2006. And... make it the 17th, but please don't make it the 28th.
Well, we normally meet on Tuesday. So the meets are not the 17th. I apologize. I didn't have a calendar in front of me.
Mr. Mayor, I mean, I think almost we might need to have some date by which, even before that date, where we it's either determined that access easement is a possibility or not. I would think by that night it either is going to happen or it's not. We'll know that first thing. There shouldn't be any need for, I mean, the landowners should be here, but I mean, they're not going to be advocating that night.
Yeah, we should know before then if that's on the table.
Well, when she spoke, she did speak to a number of other issues besides just this one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think
true,
she,
true. I was just thinking of this.
I appreciate your point, but I think April 28th is when our next public hearing is,
But is there some way we can know before the 28th if this is a component of it that certainly would help the landowner, it would help us?
The idea is for those folks to go talk to those folks, so you'll know, at least about that issue, what if anything has been worked out. I'm not I think April 28th is the correct date for to continue to. I'm sorry. It's been moved and seconded that we recess this hearing to April 28th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. And so we will continue the discussion then. It's 10 minutes to 11.
Why didn't they talk to her?
Do we have anything else?
I don't believe we have.
This is the kind of
wait, no.
Hold on. Hold on. Let me just say, I'm sorry that this has been a long agenda, and I know that's got to be frustrating for some of you who came to speak tonight. Well, I came last time. I come every time.
But you wanted to come. That's why you
came. I mean, I'm sorry about that, but the reality of our schedule is what it is, and I apologize that we're not getting through it any faster than we are. I think you can see that there's some similar issues going on with the folks who are trying to deal with Claremont, and they also feel passionately about it. We will try. Next time, I will ask staff to schedule this early in the evening. This will be the old business, and we will get through it first.
Right.
Yes, ma'am, right there, and then.
Let me be sure I understand something.
Yes, ma'am.
What you're saying is continuation of this hearing, and in the interim, the applicant and the
and y'all
property and us are supposed to discuss this easement and there be some sort of resolve to that when we come back on the 28th. In addition, you're going to listen to the other people who signed up to speak, and if they're addressing other issues, fine. If they're going to address this easement issue, they cannot do that.
No,
well, let me say this. Well, it either is or it isn't relevant to discuss the easement next time. I mean, it depends on what the nature of your conversation with the applicant. Do you see what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, if the situation has not changed by April 28th as far as whether there's still sort of a cloud over this easement, then I don't see how it would be all that relevant for people to comment on it.
Okay. My concern is that part of the whole issue was that this was to be used for emergency access. And am I hearing now that it's going to be more than just emergency access?
I think that's what I'm asking you to talk to them about.
But that's what the town said needed to happen. So
we haven't said anything needs to happen about this. Let me be clear. We asked them. We did ask them to explore some other access to the property.
But my understanding is in the issues that were brought up in the list that this was not going to be considered for construction purposes, that it was only to be considered for emergency access. So I'm confused about what we're dealing with now.
Well,
I would like you to talk. I mean, that's sort of what I'm asking y'all to meet and talk about. If you'd be willing to have a conversation with them, I mean, is there some type of access that everybody could agree to, and under what kind of terms and so forth? And I'm not asking you to tell me that right here, right now. I'm asking you to discuss it with them.
I understand that, but it was my understanding that it was the regulation of there had to be another way for emergency, for safety issues, and that the easement could be used for that. And so now I'm not sure what kind of scope we're talking about here.
Well,
I need some information. I don't think you all are being clear with us about what it is you want.
Okay. I'm not necessarily asking you to do. It's difficult for me to judge the traffic issues that are involved here without knowing whether or not they could possibly connect to Tally Ho Trail. I'm not talking about on an emergency basis, but just with regular access to Tally Ho or not. And they have shown one drawing which sketch or whatever that would show how they would picture that working if there were a connection to Tally Ho. Now I mean it's sort of one thing if their only way in and out is Raynard Road, and it's another thing if they've got two points of access worked out. And I'm trying to get some clarity about, well, could there be two points of access, or is there only one possible point of access, and that's at Raynard Road?
I think a lot of it depends on what kind of access we're talking about, and that's where my confusion is.
Yes, ma'am.
Because if you're talking about construction and you're talking about emergency, those are two very, very different issues.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I want you and them to talk about what could possibly be mutually agreeable, any of that, whatever. I can't tell you what to agree to. I'm just saying.
No, I understand that, but what I think I'm trying to say to you is, my understanding is that this was going to have to be used as an emergency access, regardless.
Well,
we already know that it's got to be a utility access for water. That's a given.
Well,
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I don't have an opinion about that.
But that was the kind of direction that we were given in the very beginning. And now it sounds like we're talking about another full-blown kind of issue.
So all of a sudden, all the information has changed.
Yeah.
Well, I understand. And that's why I can't. I'm likewise feeling at a bit of a loss. I'm not trying to be evasive with you, but I don't know what to think.
Believe me, I don't either.
Well, the question is, are we supposed to just click on these attachments on your website to see what's been proposed?
No.
How are we supposed to know?
I'm asking for y'all to have a conversation with Melville and his
neighborhood. This affects our whole neighborhood. How, you know, we went through this process with these maps and access and all of that. Now there's a major change being talked about, and none of
that
us
was
have
just
any
brought up yesterday.
Well,
where do we go to see the information so that we can know what impact this might be?
Information is power, and we didn't have it. And nobody's
proposing to make a decision right now, precisely because we're all feeling like we just got this information.
Right.
Okay, so I mean, this is a process. We're not trying to.
Will take place that will yield more information, you know, between the developers and the folks in the neighborhood.
We have started off on a very good track, have we?
I think it's up to the developers to do that.
Very bad taste.
And I think that it's up to the developers to.
Ma'am, I want to be clear about something though. This is not. I mean, you know, we're just trying to ask y'all to have a conversation.
I understand that, but
if she wants that. Okay.
Can I stop you?
What I think I'm hearing, in order for a reasonable judgment to be made, the residents need the same document that you received yesterday. They want them in their hands so they can understand what they're looking at and what they're going to make a decision about. If they can get those documents before they leave tonight, or tell them where they can get them, that would help.
Well, I don't, you know, yes, to be available from 10, you could call and request them from town hall, from town clerk's office. You can look at them over the internet, through our town website. I don't get them, I don't really get them notably in advance of anybody else. I get them Friday afternoon before we, I got most of these documents this past Friday afternoon, so I'm not.
What happened to the engineering impact study that was supposed to be done?
Well, I'm not, I can't answer, I don't know anything about that.
But these are all things that make a difference with, if we're going to go and talk with the developer about what's going to happen, what kind of impact does this have?
I mean, I don't.
We don't have all of that information.
I appreciate that, neither do I.
I think because everything's evolving very quickly, and we're trying to catch up with it,
right.
And we want to make sure that we catch you up with it. And I think things are real different than they seemed 6 months ago. So we don't want to make a decision until we understand how they're different,
right.
And until you understand how they're different, and until you've had an opportunity to talk with the folks who have this proposal. So what we're trying to do, even though it feels kind of piecemeal, we're trying to make sure that nobody's left out and that questions are all answered and that we make a good decision. And I know it feels really kind of jagged, but we're trying to be really open.
And everything we have except for what was handed to us tonight is on the website. It was all posted there yesterday. And we got some of the materials yesterday.
Not everything.
There was a traffic study done on Tally Ho last week. Do you have the results of that yet? Do you have that
traffic
in hand yet? They have a traffic study.
I don't know.
We haven't done a traffic study. We put some counters out for internal staff discussion that you don't have. Nobody has. I don't have it.
But anything that we have is on the website.
It will be. Some of the stuff, again, was flowing back and forth yesterday and today. I just spoke with Jeff.
Some stuff was just handed to us.
Yeah, we'll make sure tomorrow that it is. But as I explained to you all, there was no anticipation if you all were interested in pursuing anything to do with this alternative connection. Staff's not in a position to say the application is complete with that option. There was no way you could really take action tonight to consider that connection.
I mean, part of what I'm feeling is that tonight you decide whether you're going to make a decision or go for a continuance. I mean, I'm feeling pressure, like the decision's going to be made and you don't have, like, a decision going to be made.
We're trying to avoid making a decision that is not based on complete information and isn't really felt out. And that's why it feels weird.
And we don't talk about it at all until the next public hearing.
Yeah.
That'll be our next bite at the apple.
So it's messy. It's messy.
All right. One last question from the person I said I was going to take the last question from 20 minutes ago.
I do appreciate the hour, and I'm sorry to keep you here 1 minute longer than necessary. My name is Maury Weiss. First of all, I want to tell you how hurt I am that none of you wanted to come for a romp in the woods with me. I really did want to show you the woods at the end of Claymore. My question is this. The last time that we were allowed to present our, albeit partisan, self-serving pleas to the board was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. You were not present. Mr. Alderman Herrera was Judge Pro Tem, and Alderman Geist was not present.
My mom had just died. I'm real sorry I wasn't there.
No, I'm saying that we didn't get to present to a complete board. And so are we allowed to start anew what we wanted to present to the board and what we did present to the board so that everybody on the board, when they vote, has the full information that we presented?
We have the full.
Well, I mean, I watched the video of that hearing. I believe all of us were either present or have watched that video. So, but, you know, as far as what you're going to say at any future public hearing, you have 3 minutes. And I would appreciate your focusing on the most relevant topics that you can think of.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. All right. Good grief. This meeting is true.
Well, can I make a suggestion? Because today I got a lot of emails from people and staff. And I know it's because you were getting information
like that. Could the board discuss next week how we can make it just a little less last minute for both staff and ourselves and kind of put some deadlines on folks? Because, you know, it's just, you know, I hate to be a lawyer, but everybody's got a deadline. Sometimes you get a continuance, sometimes you don't.
And when are we supposed to read stuff?
Like that. Well,
because
we
can't
read the work.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we can take that up at a later point. I think it's just the nature of the situation is that it's really still an ongoing conversation, and I think our staff's doing the best they can.
I'm not complaining about
it. No, I know.
I'm saying setting a deadline for everybody.
No, but I'd
like to speak to that point.
Actually, Mr. Attorney, yeah. could we, not to belabor this meeting too much more, but the lady referenced the possibility of board members making a field trip out to the site with her while we have an application pending. Is that? Could
I
you
think
comment
she's referring
on that?
To the Carolina Common site?
No, she's referring
no.
To the Common site.
That. I advise the board not to do that for this reason. That I don't know if this is on or not.
I don't think it is, but
I think
I advise the board not to do that because of all the information that they are allowed to make their decision upon in a matter such as this. The conditional use permit is what's called a quasi-judicial hearing, and that means that they have ex parte meetings just between one side or the other, one particular witness. And view the site with a particular party who has an interest in the matter would be an ex parte meeting that the statute, in essence, prescribes. So it was my advice that they not do that, not that they shouldn't meet the site meetings, but that they should not meet with the applicant on the site, they should not meet with proponents on the site, they should not meet with opponents on the site. The information that they should receive should be at this hearing, and that all the decision that they make has to be based upon information at the hearing. So that's why.
Mr. Bro, I worked in Superior Court for 30 years, and the point that I made, I don't care if you go alone, I don't care if you go with the applicant, but the point is, there's nothing like seeing it in real life compared to these lines and drawings and pictures. Whenever
okay.
You had a trial and you went to the site, it was always clearer than anything.
Absolutely. And this board can, and it has occasionally happened before, the board can decide to go and visit as a board. I personally have visited and walked all over this site with many of you who are in this room now. It's just that I did it 3 or 4 years ago before there was a development application, before we were involved in a quasi-judicial proceeding. I think
I walked the site. Randy walked the site.
Lydia
the
was there.
I
wanted to emphasize is please don't feel insulted that we declined your offer to go with you. I would also decline to go with Mr. Brooks if he called and asked me to go with him. And it's because we're right now in a quasi-judicial proceeding. But for example, if you were concerned about some possible future development that could be a couple years away on another piece of property and you wanted to go and look at that, that's something that we could do, and it's something that actually we did do on this very property.
4 years ago.
Mark, I think the
okay.
Majority of the board is
standing up. All right, this meeting is adjourned.